loving to it.
It's frightening to have a form listed with you. Comfortable.
Thank you.
And you're completely
question. Are you supposed to do the roll call right away?
Yeah.
Yes.
And do we have the tape working? Are we ready to roll?
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's start with Charlie.
I'm
you
here.
Made eye contact with me.
And I'm here. Present.
Dana's here.
Peter.
Hi, Peter.
Greg Pepping.
Nice to meet you, Greg. Hi, Sue.
Mike Rockton.
Mike Rockton.
Sid Slater.
Doug Anker.
Program Bernard.
Rick Longinati.
Mark Fima.
Nice glasses.
David Stearns.
Welcome, everybody. So, we have a good spread. Help yourselves. If you're in public, welcome to you. And the food's for everybody. So that's the most important piece of information. And where's the bathroom? I don't actually know.
The bathroom?
The
woman's
bathroom
is
outside right
and
up there.
Follow around.
The men's is around?
You just keep going to the... I didn't actually find a men's, but there's a sort of... Anybody who shows up can use one. You know, it's like a sort of family thing.
Oh.
So you can go. There may be a men's if you keep going. I didn't actually explore.
Okay. Anything else comfort-wise? Space-wise? Okay. Somewhere we have the Wi-Fi. There's the password. Everybody have success with that? All right, good. So let me just...
Oh, no, it doesn't work.
It does not work. Okay, so that's another trip to see Roger.
Roger is right up here. Okay,
sorry.
No, it's good to get this straight. So first what we'd like to start with is public comment. The method that the committee is gravitating towards is that there certainly be public comment at the beginning of each session, because the 2 days make one meeting, that there be public comment at the end. And as you desire, as you approach a decision or an important time to ask the public, you will. So right now we're starting with the official starting the meeting public comment, which is meant to be focused on actual agenda items. Anyone care to make a public comment? Raise your hand if you would like to. So, relatively short, if you please. Would you like to come up here to speak or simply speak from where you are? Come on up.
So, anyway, I appreciate that you did do some, I appreciate that you did do some work to make more audible for the most graduating.
Sure.
I guess.
He should sit so that we can protect him.
Under Section 607 of your charter,
please,
as you change your
name, Reed, use the mic. There.
Can't hear you.
Under Section 607 of the charter, says everyone of the applicable section of the city code says everybody must vote. So what I understand is that forbids abstentions, and so I wonder is whether this thing about standing aside for consensus in effect constitutes an abstention which is not permitted under the applicable rules. Secondly, I have a problem with what recon means, maybe others do too. I had hoped that the early work of the committee would consist of reviewing all the work that's been done for the past 10, 15 years. There's been an immense amount of work done, and it may use a lot of time to be served by, say, by the committee to review that and accept it. Things that they agree with, and then ask for expert help on stuff that they don't. Thirdly, I suggested Tina, I think, but I'd like to suggest too that the, I think this is for the facilitators, that perhaps email that are sent to committee should also be sent to those members of the public that have signed up and requested. It only takes a push of a button, and it would keep those of us who are interested, but from the public, give us more advice about what's going on. We'd also, I think, if there are handouts that are given to the members of the committee at any time, they ought to also be supplied to the public. Thank you.
Sir, I was fussing with the logistics, and I didn't get your Section 607 comment. What was your comment about Section 607 directed to?
The Article 12B of your proposed charter, which was modified last time, says that in order to receive consensus, people can stand aside. I wonder if that's the equivalent of an abstention. And if it is, then of course you're violating the city charter.
Okay, that's good discussion. Thank you. There was one other gentleman. Yes, hello. Two other gentlemen.
Good evening,
Paul. It seemed to be working when you leaned into it.
Yes, just clarification on the agenda. I take it that the issue of the consultant services is not going to happen tonight?
It will happen tomorrow afternoon.
Thank you.
Members of the committee, hello. I'm sure you remember me from your first three meetings, that I'm Jerry Paul, local electrical engineer and corporate strategist, who's devoted over 1,000 hours to the very topic which is the subject of this committee, the charge of this committee. As yet, I've written a letter to you via your facilitator. Did you receive that letter? Offering to deliver to you at no charge the most significant results of my research in the form of a formal presentation early in your recon phase, when your consultants may still have sufficient time to tweak and vet its numerous substantial new ideas prior to the end of your recon phase. These ideas include the latest version of the Lotwifer alternative, which, as compared to, for instance, desalination, promises to be a better deal by some 8 times, because it has the potential to deliver 4 times more water at about half the cost of design, permitting, construction, and financing. Not to mention much lower operating costs, much quicker aquifer recharge, and much more robust drought proofing. The second is the cross-county pipeline alternative, also roughly 8 times better value than the desalination plan. It's so environmentally excellent that fisheries regulators may grant us large concessions in various areas just to make it happen. The third is a profit-making pond project, which of course being profit-making is the best valuation of all projects. The next one is tertiary tub string alternative, which solves the problem of making recycled wastewater potable. The next one is a preemptive regulator strategy, which offers 13 extra benefits to regulators to encourage them to strike an early grand bargain to create habitat conversion plan we can easily live with and be proud of, to virtually end the decades of constant and fruitless niggling, and almost significantly, and most significantly, to reduce water rights acquisition time from some 20 years to about 3 years, which Soquel Creek Water District's water rights attorney Peter Teal told his board that he experiences routinely. The last one is the water looping alternative, which would store water without using reservoirs and would give salmon and steelhead extra water that they need at critical times and places, while most likely it would increase the amount of water allotted to humans as well. I've looked deeply into the water quantity, cost, environmental, and regulatory aspects of these and other potentially game-changing projects. I invite you to see and hear the next 30 minutes of details about the best of them in a presentation at our earliest mutual convenience. Hopefully, while your technical experts may still have time to finish fleshing out, vetting, and ranking the many ideas and suggestions before the end of the recon phase. If you accept my invitation, I'll also make a video to give your experts, staff, and associates a head start on these complicated matters. Furthermore, I plan to be available to help transfer the rest of my research and bibliography to your experts, and hopefully while there is still time. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And I'm going to address some of that when I go through the agenda, and if I forget, wave at me.
Okay. I'm going to be gone from tomorrow for a month, and that's why I'd like to understand
about it. If I forget, you can have it. Thank you.
Thank you.
And one more comment. Thank you very much.
My name is Bill Fieberling. I was city engineer and public works director from 1962 to 82, and I've taken a lot of interest in this project. I wrote a letter to you. I hope most of you got it. I would like to talk to each and every one of you because I have a lot of information that I've learned, and I'm a competent person in this regard. I guess that this is not on the agenda at this point in time. I want to present at some point in time the alternative of off-stream storage. It's one of the alternatives that is listed. And I'm sure I must be out of timing right
now.
No,
when I get really close, that's when we're out of time.
I don't know if this is the proper time to be talking about alternatives on this project.
It's almost the proper time. And when we talk about the overview of the next few months, I think that there will be an opportunity for this energy you have around alternatives that you might like as long as the committee liked it. Okay?
So will it be listed somewhere in the newspaper or on the website or something?
If there's something happening with alternatives, it certainly will be, but I can't speak for the committee yet. Let me run through the agenda and I'll show you how it fits into today. Thank you, sir. Any others? So, here we are with the agenda. So, we're going to have a presentation about contracting processes, which is built on Mark's request at the last meeting. So his request was, please explain how you got to this point with the Stratus contract. The facilitators added some requests onto that because we would like the city to take that opportunity to explain the contracting process better so that you know what leverage points you can use. So there's going to be that discussion, and Heidi will be heading off to middle school graduation or something equally important in the middle of that, and we all forgive her for that. All right. So then we have committee member updates, which, as you recall, is letting your colleagues know the progress, ideas, highlights of the last month as it relates to the work of the committee. We have a review of the two documents that summarize the last meeting and also a discussion about what you want in the future. We have, and the test about the calendaring issue, which is not only scheduling for sure your upcoming meetings over the year, but also discussing whether the length of meeting time you have now is appropriate. Nicholas has told me he's actually going to use the Play-Doh in this discussion, so we're going to see. The other thing is that what we want is to get guidance from you, and then either tonight or whenever the appropriate time is, do a little bit of doodling. But we don't want to spend a lot of time actually calendaring if, in fact, you decide you want an extra day. We want to do that as much as we can technologically, okay? We have a report from the Charter Subcommittee. Now, they've worked on everything but the section that has to do with consultant hiring. And then finally, for today, is the discussion about RECON. RECON stands for reconnaissance. And the idea is, and this was the option that the committee chose after discussion last time, the idea is that they're going to do a very rapid and very permissive analysis of the decision. And then they're going to start all over again and do it again, having kind of figured out what the parts are. So later on today, I'm going to be looking at a table, and we'll have it on the screen. So if you don't have a copy, you'll be able to see it, that shows a possible flow of work, which the committee can amend as they wish. And in that flow of work is the question of how to capture this marvelous creative power and energy about the alternatives. So that's the part I was alluding to that would perhaps give you a place to bring your ideas. Then we have the evaluation. I want to quickly say, now we have written evaluations, we're going to do them for real for the actual meeting. Once I got evaluated poorly because of my flip-flops, and don't do that to me because I have a broken toe. I have much better looking shoes in the car. And thank you for laughing. Because remember, that's part of the contract. All right. So tomorrow, public comment, the criteria for expert selection, which is a revisit of conversations from last time. The question of how you want to proceed with your technical support consultant decision, which I think is really two separate questions, and we can talk about that. What you want to do in terms of the independent review panel, you've decided you wanted one no matter what. You're going to have to give the city some more guidance before they proceed. The website subcommittee is going to report, and the sort of the interesting part of that for you all is figuring out how you want to handle the information that comes in. Nicholas and I have not done a great job and are probably dissatisfying to some of you because we get the emails. We're not used to functioning like staff. We don't know how to send it forward, and we want you to tell us. And that fits in with the website idea because people naturally are going to want to use a website as a place to send information. So we're going to have to at least touch on that. The agenda for June and July, which will depend a lot on what you think of the RECON overview, oral communication, evaluation, and wrap-up. Now, there are two significant things that are not on this, once again, crammed agenda. At least two. I'm sure you have other ideas. And if I can read my own handwriting without my glasses. One is, in the interviews that we did for the assessment, which included committee members, council members, and other kind of people who seemed important to the questions, a lot of people, especially a lot of committee members, said that one useful thing this committee could do is to sift through the facts and build a body of facts that are agreed on and articulate the ones that aren't and why not. If we're always in a rush with the agenda, we are not going to serve that desire as well as we might. And so it's up to Nicholas and me, with your guidance, to not let the time pressures put the fact questions to the side, number one, and to come up with some systems designs for how to deal with these problems. And the number one is very simple. We have a flip chart now, and if things come up that you want clarification over the long term, but you can't necessarily hash it out today, let's start to keep track of what those are. And at the next meeting, we would like to report with you to you about some design ideas for how to efficiently reach your fact desires. So that's not really on the agenda today, but it's something that you want and that we need to deal with. The other thing that's not on the agenda today is how you're going to report to the council and whether you're going to report to the council now or the next time or whatever. So if you're feeling you will want to report to the council before July, then we're going to have to find a way to squeeze that in there. Any other thoughts? So that's it? Yes.
Yeah, there was the item that you sent out to us about whether we wanted our email addresses on the website, how we wanted to deal with communication from the public. Is that going to be in one of those items?
I think it fits with the website discussion.
Okay.
Very good point. I made a promise to you, and I think I met it. When we talk about recon, we're going to figure out where the alternatives fit and how to get that energy in. Any other unmet promises, expectations, or silliness? Seriousness? Okay. Well, I think that means that the city's up. Hello, Heidi.
Hello.
You all know Heidi Luke Clark?
I'm just sending you an email that has those two documents. I thought we could try to get them projected up on the screen. Pardon me?
So we're going to try to get some of the documents that Heidi's referring to onto the screen, but in the meantime, we're going to get Heidi to start. Oh, because these don't show.
That's the.
They were the ones that she sent yesterday.
Anybody seen that?
No.
I think that's okay. If this is the one we're talking about, I think it's okay. You can see the shape. You can see that it's a flowchart.
I'm looking for it.
I think it's fine. I'll refer to it, and then if you have questions drilling down, I can talk
and
about it.
And the thing is, all of you with computers, you got this in your inbox yesterday.
This was not in that packet,
oh,
actually.
Yeah, that's sorry. Why I'm trying to get it projected. I just sent you an email about this necklace that has attachments. That and that one up there.
Okay.
The same size.
Yeah. I do take a lot of notes because I want to make sure I cover everything that you have questions about, but I also want to make sure that you're comfortable asking questions as I go, of course. I'm going to cover two main topics, and then I think Rosemary's going to chime in a little bit as we talk about where the committee can potentially fit into a consultant hiring or management role. The first is going to be really just giving you the nuts and bolts of the city purchasing process. I'm going to be referring to this chart a little bit. And then the second one, I am going to use the example of the Stratus. That's the packet that got sent out to you last night. So I'm going to use that as an example of how we actually implemented the city's purchasing process to hire a consultant.
Hi, a little louder.
I know, it's really hard, though.
You want
a mic?
Yeah, why not?
And I'm a wanderer and a hand waver, so this is going to be really challenging. So the city has two basic contracting methods, and one is for construction projects, which we're not going to be talking about today, but I just want to make sure that you're aware that it's there. The second one is for professional services, or we just refer to as services. This chart here is one that was developed by our purchasing department that walks us through purchasing of general services. Now, services can include, are you buying mops and brooms? Are you buying cleaning services? Or, in this case, are we hiring a consultant to do something for us?
There's a link to that document embedded in there. I apologize. You might not be able to get to it because it's on the intranet.
It is on the intranet. And that was part of the problem is we have this on our local intranet, and so it's not necessarily public information. So the other thing to make note of this, and I guess where I'm going with this is just a general framework for hiring. There's lots of different variations on this theme that we follow because of the services that we're trying to procure. This one in particular is for services that are hired out of a general fund as opposed to an enterprise fund. And the water department is an enterprise fund. So we have a number of different rules and local rules and regulations, state regulations that we're required to comply with as well. And then also if there's any kind of grant funding in addition to your rate funding, you have a whole other set of rules to go by. So this isn't every little detail of hiring, it's just kind of a high level. In general, there's two different approaches to hiring. We talked a little bit about this last time. There's a whole RFP or request for proposals path. And you take that path if you understand your scope of work. You're pretty confident that you understand the type of consultant that would provide that work. You issue the RFP with a pretty defined scope, and you receive your proposals. The other method is the RFQ method, where you're not entirely sure of your scope of work. You have a pretty good sense of the kinds of qualifications that you want in the consultant, and you're able to define that in your RFQ, you issue your RFQ, and what you get back then is a proposal or a statement of qualifications, where the consultant or the consultant team is really providing back to the owner their sense of, this is what I understand about your issue, this is who we are, and this is what we can provide for you. You go through a qualifications-based selection process, and then you work out a scope of work for that consultant. So there's two very different ways that you can go about hiring. And then to make it even more complicated, you can actually do an RFQ process where you use that to shortlist. Let's say you think there's probably 100 different vendors out there that can provide your service. You use the RFQ process to shortlist, and then you do an RFP process. So I guess my point in telling you all of that, besides the fact that it's really interesting, is that it can take a really long time. You're required in an RFP process to have the proposal or the RFP on the streets for at least 21 days. An RFQ is defined a lot more vague. It's not in terms of days, it's in terms of however long you think it is to reach the vendors that could provide you your service. But then if you couple the RFQ process with the RFP process, you're into kind of like that 5, 6, 8 week time frame doing the hiring. Well, you can't see that anyway. I'm no Vanna White, right? So what this is doing is walking us through depending upon the value of your contract. So if you have a contract that's between $2,500 and $10,000, the city is allowed to go procure that service. You don't have to get quotes. We can call a consultant that we're confident can provide us our service, and we can contract with that consultant. Between $10,000 and $100,000, or actually $99,999, we have to go out and solicit three quotes. So we call three vendors that we think can provide our service, and we don't even necessarily have to get a proposal back from them. We just have to have asked them if they want to propose. They say no. Perhaps we get one quote, and we're allowed to contract with that single vendor. And then what's most commonly used is contracting for services that are over $100,000. And I say most commonly, but those are in the probably in the public works and the water department, where you have significantly larger capital projects that just by their nature are greater than $100,000. So in that case, we have to go into the full-blown public process by which you have to post your RFP or your RFQ on a website. You have to post it outside our city clerk's office. And it's our benefit to send it to as many vendors as we know that will be qualified. And every department maintains lists of vendors that provide different services. So, for example, for general engineering services, the water department has a list of maybe 100 consultants, both local, in the region, statewide, and nationwide, that provide that service. You give them their 21 days to submit their proposals, and then you evaluate them. Now, with the evaluation part, we have a little bit of flexibility there in terms of who is on the evaluation panel. So, for example, if it's a smaller contract, and we feel like for the city water department, we have the expertise, we're going to put in a pump station, and we've built pump stations before, we're fairly confident that we understand the nature of the work, we may evaluate those proposals with staff. If it's something more complicated, we haven't done it before, It's more a regional project. We have already had an interview panel where we include Public Works, or we would include folks from the county. We've had some of our consultants sit on different interview teams just because they have more expertise and experience with different topics. And then most recently with the Stratus contract, we had the water commissioner sit on that interview panel, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. So we do have flexibility there in terms of both evaluating the proposals and doing the entire hiring process. I wonder if there's anything else I want to say about that. From a timing perspective, because I think there was interest in understanding if we could in fact shorten the time frame, you develop your RFP or RFQ, which can take a couple weeks. You release it, that's 3 weeks, you review it. The whole process, assuming we're starting from scratch, is probably about 2 months from the time you decide you need a consultant until the time you hire a consultant. So it's a bit of a lengthy process. Is there anything else I should add there?
Well, and then once you've selected, a consultant, then typically you negotiate a contract with the consultant specifics, and there's usually a back and forth about refining the scope and the cost, and then if it's over $100,000, it has to go to the city council. Mm-hmm. So then there's that action on the back end of it. Mm-hmm. So those are additional time frames on there.
And that's a really good point in terms of the negotiation of the contract, because we do budget in our annual capital improvement budget for consultants to do tasks X, Y, and Z. And sometimes we're not right in how much it's going to cost to design that pump station. So part of the hiring process is, once you've selected your consultant, is to go through a contract negotiation process where you make sure that the tasks that you need are in their contract, in their scope, and that you're able to pay and willing to pay the amount that they propose to do so. So there's a lot of negotiation with regards to the finalizing the contract.
Hey, can I ask a question? Mm-hmm. Everything you just said does not apply to enterprise funds, or does?
Everything I said does apply to enterprise funds. The nuances get to when there's different funding mechanisms, the projects are, depending upon the project. But I haven't talked about any specific project that would be different from general or enterprise fund. So everything I've talked about would be relevant to what we're doing here.
Good, thanks. Yeah. I wanted to make sure I didn't get lost at the beginning.
Yeah, sorry.
The distinction between operating and enterprise.
I guess then I want to just walk through a little bit of the material that got sent out to you last night, because it is a good example of how we implemented most recently the RFP process, and in particular the RFQ process. We typically don't do RFQ processes because it's very common for us to really have a good understanding of what it is that we're hiring for. In this case, this was not the case with regards to the economic analysis. So I did do a little bit of walkthrough time primarily in my memo, primarily because it came up in the discussion at your first meeting. You know, didn't we already do a curtailment study? Why do we need to do another one? So I wanted to make sure everybody had kind of a broader context as to how we got here to the Stratus, consideration of the Stratus contract. So I'm not going to reread it to you because I'm sure you've read it. We did do a curtailment study, which looked at very much the same things that we were asking Stratus to do in the original RFQ, which was to really understand what are the economic impacts to your community without water. And what they looked at was shortages ranging from 10% to 60%. And they did interviews, and they did panels, and they did, they went out and talked to various customer classes to really try and get a firm grasp on that. That was in the late 1990s when the curtailment study was actually done. And then the curtailment study was wrapped together with the conservation plan and the water supply studies to do the IWP. And the IWP, I think, is important because what that looked at was what is the balance of all those different things. If you can ration 60%, if the economy can handle 60%, what does your water supply project look like? If it can only handle 25%, what does your water supply look like, and so on and so forth. So Gary Fisk did do that work for us back in the 90s, and he has the confluence model that we used then and that we continue to use for a number of different purposes. moving forward, the city team with SoCo Creek Water District in 2007, with the direction by City Council to investigate from a technological perspective and from an environmental perspective the pros, cons, limitations, what have you, of the desalination project specifically. And so all the studies that we've done since 2007 were technical studies, and they were vetted through the Squidward Task Force, and then all culminating in the EIR that was published last year. And I say that because that was a 16-year time frame where the curtailment study back in 1997 was the last time we really considered the economic impacts, the financial impacts to a community on a water-no-water project. In the meantime, we were doing a lot of technical work, but we didn't follow up and kind of dot the I's on what is the financial impact to the ratepayer and what is the economic impact to the community. So in that time frame last August, when the mayor and city manager said, let's take a pause on the diesel project and kind of reconsider everything, we still knew at that time that we had two pieces that were not fully vetted. We had hired a consulting firm, Raftellis, to do a rate study for us and a financial impact of our overall CIP. And so we also hired them to look very specifically at what would be the rate impact to our customers to construct and operate this desalination project. That was the financial, that's what we were calling the financial piece. What's the financial impact to our customers? And then the other piece is where we get to the Stratus contract, where a lot had changed. We knew a lot had changed since 1997 with regards to supply alternatives or demand management, conservation. We were starting the update to our conservation master plan, and we knew demand was dropping. There were so many, and the fish flow issue was really becoming a lot more defined in terms of how much water we would have to keep in the streams for fish. So we recognized that so many factors had changed since that 1997 time frame that we really needed to go back and revisit that curtailment study in a much more focused and modern way. Again, I gave you some time frames in that memo where, which I don't remember, it was June of last year where we did the RFP. It again was on the streets for 21 days. The interesting thing with this one, we posted on the website and we sent it to five specific firms that we did a little research and found five firms that we thought could provide the service. One of them was non-responsive. And then we got two proposals. One of them was a team of three of them, if that makes sense. So they felt like with what they knew about the city, historically, what they knew about our issues with regards to economic analyses and also the fish issues and the impacts that that was going to have on us, they felt their team would be best if all three of those teamed together. So we got the two proposals, the evaluation team. It was staff from both the city and SoCo Creek Water District, because the other thing that we were contemplating at that time was up until then, the city and the district were doing all of our, what are you telling me? Am I late?
Well, only if you're going to be late for your daughter.
Okay, thank you. We had done all of our technical studies as a joint project, because that's what we were evaluating. It made a lot of sense for the financial study and the economic study, obviously, to do that independently. But nonetheless, the city had gone through this proposal process, this RFQ process. So we did do the evaluations of the proposals and the interviews as a team. So we had staff from the city and the district. We had somebody from the Water Commission there, and we also had Raftellis, a member of the Raftellis team, to really provide that kind of, again, broad expertise that as city staff, we knew we didn't have all of it. We knew we had to reach out and find some more expertise. I think that's the end of the story, because that was July of last year. We could have been negotiating a little bit of a contract with Stratus, and then the EIR went out, and here we are, done.
Do you recall the five firms to whom you sent?
So one was Stratacon. I think I put the two.
I had Stratacon and Stratus.
Stratus is made up of Stratus, Gary Fisk. So he was an individual that we sent, and then Dave Mitchell, who's from MQ. And I don't remember the fifth one. I can find it if you're interested. Yeah. Yeah, and we had we reached out to some resource economists or some through Berkeley, and everybody kind of kept coming back, particularly to the Dave Mitchell one.
So it was a little over a year ago that there was a decision made to do an economic study.
It was a year ago where we issued the we were developing the RFP, RFQ.
I'm trying to understand the motivation back then. That was when, you know, desal was still the preferred option. It was the assumption of the city that it was going to proceed with desalination. And desalination was meant to solve the water, disparity. So why would there be a need to do another economic study?
I think that's a really good question. And we recognize that the EIR is one piece of information. And that, like I said in the memo, it's an informational document to really communicate the potential environmental effects of a project. But that's just kind of one facet of making a choice about whether to do or not to do a project. The community, the public, the governing bodies, they also need to understand what is the impact going to be to the individual ratepayer? Is it going to be so significant that it's really going to have an impact on the community in that financial way? And then also, what is the impact going to be on the kind of lifestyle in the community if we do or don't do the project? And so what this Raftellis was going to look at, that financial piece, and then Stratus would look at that other piece. And I think some of the things that we were thinking about, but of course we're not those experts, we're the engineers, and these are the folks that would think about that, is if you have a 45% shortage, let's just say, if you have a 25% shortage and you own a restaurant, what does that do to you? And so maybe you close at lunch, I don't know, but that's the things we wanted to understand. If you close at lunch, what happens to that staff that worked the lunch? And so those were the kinds of questions that we wanted to know. We knew what the electeds wanted to know. We knew the public needed to know in order to make kind of a really informed, full decision about a project. Because the project hadn't been approved by any means. It had a whole approval process to go through.
So there were several other questions. Peter, you had your hand up earlier.
Yeah. I just wanted to clarify. So the economic impact study logically would actually be the second step, right? After you kind of focus on what you want to do, or you have a few options on the table, and then you have somebody come in and analyze the economic impact. And this was a specific focus of that
It was, but I want to make sure that we understand that it could also be a generic study, and not necessarily, I think this question came up at a Water Commission meeting at one point, is why are you analyzing a desal project if we don't know that we're having a desal project yet? And what we tried to communicate was we're not. What we're trying to evaluate is what is the impact, both from a rate perspective and from a social economic perspective, of having full-served water versus a 25% shortage versus a 15%. Because that's what they did in the IWP, where there was no conclusion about a water supply project yet.
Did that answer?
Pretty much.
Sue?
Honey, you said a few moments ago that it makes a lot of sense to do financial and economic studies separately, and I missed what. Separately from what?
Separately from the district, sorry. So up until this point, we were basically joined at the hips through an MOA to do everything together and share cost share 50-50. But because our customer base is different, rate payers are different, the whole economy, the makeup of the economy is different, it made sense to do these two pieces separately. But not separately from each other, which is another interesting point, because they really do feed each other information, but just separate from each other.
I was on the Water Commission at the time when we discussed this, and I will just fill you in on some of the discussion that we had. The 1997 curtailment study was done at a time when some of the major businesses that were being interviewed as to how limitations on their use of water would impact on their business. And people were businesses like Wrigley, Lipton, Texas Instruments. Some of the major employers that were being considered at that time are no longer here. We have a radically different economy. The other thing that we were concerned about and discussed with the Water Commission was that at that time we were just instituting the then Master Conservation Plan. Now it's 15 years, it's 15 years later. And one of the questions was whether there was going to be sufficient savings that could be achieved with businesses, or if businesses were conserving to an extent that shortages of water would have a more drastic impact on them because they wouldn't have more acts that they could easily do to reduce their water use. Whether there would be, so the concern that we have is that we're putting together this package where we're studying the impact of water shortages, of an insufficient water supply on our population. We're considering an alternative for filling it, but we haven't, in terms of defining our need, one of the questions of defining our need is how does it hit our economy, our people, our jobs, people's ability to even live in this community and afford to live here if we don't have a sufficient water supply.
Is there anybody on the committee who has experience with NEPA or the CEQA, you guys call it, a committee member? So how normal is it to do the process up to the point of publishing a draft EIR and then do more research before the final?
I can comment on that. Mm-hmm. I mean, the city council is going to make this decision ultimately, at least at the time we're thinking they're going to. The city council is going to be making a decision about any project, but you've got to quite a number of document related to the federal, or usually, I don't know, more typically CEQA, but there's something in this one. And the environmental document gives you useful information about what are the consequences of this project, doing the project, not doing the project, what are some alternatives you might consider. But there can be a lot of other issues that you're trying to figure out at the same time about that project that are not touched at all in the CEQA document. Economics is certainly one of those. Now, you could have had that in there, but typically CEQA it's not a required subject under CEQA. So you decide, well, let's get some other information about that. You also might decide you're going to go out and do a survey of people in the community who've done that before this council to see, well, what's the public opinion about this issue? That's a different question than what's going to happen to the various elements of the environment. So we've had a lot of times when we're nearing the end of the CEQA process, it's taken a year and a half, 6 months, whatever, and decided, well, what else do we not know enough to make this decision? And it's typically the case that the council makes a decision, they get the CEQA document and they either approve, accept the document and adopt it or accept it, but then they have a separate decision. You've accepted this document, but are we going to do the project? Are we going to do what are we actually going to do now? And input into that can be a lot of different information that you didn't gather in the CEQA process. So that's typical.
Okay.
I can project. That's what I was saying. Don't want to get too close to that. In the document, and I think in the meeting last time, David had made the same comment that the choice was obvious. It was, I think the document said it was unanimous between the two bidders. Can you share a little bit about what the selection can be deemed dispositive in that decision? What was so compelling about Stratus compared to Stratacon?
I guess off the top of my head, three things. The teaming part was evidence to us that they had given a lot of thought to what our needs were and what the full scope of the issues were going to be kind of feeding into their study. So they had the resource economist, they had the fisheries person, they had the modeling person. They just have a lot of broader experience. The historical experience with us is useful. And I think that one can kind of play both ways. You know, you hire a consultant and they work well with them, and that provides a benefit to you as the owner, assuming the relationship was good. I mean, that can go both ways, but in this instance, we felt like it was a really positive. Leading into it, we had heard a lot of good things about the Stratus team. We read a lot of their past projects. I've seen a lot of presentations with them. The team had seen a lot of presentations by them on various topics. The other person, it was a person, he was a researcher, and I can't remember now where, it was down south, and this was what he did economic analysis, socioeconomic analysis in communities. We didn't feel like he had really the bandwidth, for one. He didn't fully answer the questions that were kind of related to the city, as opposed to kind of more generally in a much more kind of academic sense of this would be a really interesting case study. And I think part of it, although not totally part of the driving factor, was we asked them to come up so that we could meet them. I always find that that's really relevant and important for the teams to meet each other, because if you have a long relationship with each other, you kind of want to see them and make sure that you can. That's just as another element of the interview process. And at the last moment, he called and said he couldn't make it. So he actually did his interview from a hotel room. And the kind of reflection for us was that how important was this job in general to you? So, but again, that was just kind of a layer of what we were viewing as the skill set and functioning.
Question. At the end of this process, did you have a raw score? I noticed in the end here you had these forms, you had certain points for this and points for that. Was there a raw score between these two teams and one score 90 and the other one scored 60? Or do you have any recollection of that?
We do have a raw score, but I have no recollection of what that is.
Do you want to follow? Is this something that, it's not confidential, right? Can we get that?
I think we can get that. I guess I would add, though, too, that you saw the rating sheet, and there's a lot of conversation. It's interesting to look at rating sheets when you have an evaluation team of 10, say, because some people are really generous with their points, and some people aren't as generous. So what we tend to do is kind of take an average of all the scores, but we could certainly bring back a 90 versus 10 or whatever it ended up being.
There is another part to this presentation, so I'd like to move on to Rosemary, and also thank you so much, Heidi. You actually made contracting sound wild and interesting. So Rosemary's on the letter, of course.
So I was asked to talk a little bit about what are the leverage points, and I opened this particularly for this purpose, the opportunity to mold the clay. And with respect to contracting. And so that's what I'm going to talk about. So I'm going to split this into sort of two parts. The first part is in the hiring process, and what are the opportunities in the hiring process? And the second part is in the management or in the project when you've made your decision and you've got your consultant. So based on the things that Heidi talked about in the process, if you're going to do a qualifications-based selection, you decide to either do a request for proposals if you have a clear scope, or a request for qualifications if you want to be in a position to negotiate and expand and use the consultant's expertise to help you develop your scope. And in that process, the key sort of decision there, an opportunity for engagement, leverage, if you will, by the committee would be, do we know enough about a scope to make a scope of work-based selection, a request for proposals, or do we know enough about consultants, the kind of expertise we would want to, today say to me as a group, okay, these are the type of resources we need, go out there and start working on a request for qualifications or a request for proposals. That's one thing. Once you get that together, then another opportunity is in reviewing the document. Every thing that gets advertised gets put into a document that's a request for qualifications or a request for proposals, and has description information in there. In addition to that, it has evaluation criteria. In other words, you tell the consultants, this is how whatever you give us is going to be evaluated. So there's looking and reviewing the descriptive document to see, that it matches up with what you thought. And then there's also the evaluation criteria, which are, they can be really important. And they can include sort of some pretty standard things like how well is the firm qualified, how much of this kind of work have they done in the past. Or it can include things like, have you worked with community or citizens-based groups like this? Because maybe that would be important to you. Once those two things are out there and you've sort of sailed the document out and it's out there in the cyberspace for 21 days at least,
Then you get the proposals back, and there's an evaluation process for the proposals. And if you read the documents, you saw that what those are. And so there's an opportunity to participate in the evaluation process. And that includes, you know, reading all the proposals, you know, writing down your score, meeting with the other reviewers, talking to them, and, you know, making a decision about, you know, who to interview, for example. Or if there's somebody who has, you know, really knocked your socks off, then let's forget the interview process, let's select them. If you go to the interview process, an opportunity to figure out what the interview questions are and to participate in the interview, and obviously to, you know, rate their responses, have them see who they are in person, talk to them about what they're doing. And then finally, when you make the selection, you know, along with the other people in the interview process or whatever the evaluation stages you're at, then there's the contract negotiations where you can lay out, you know, the specifics and the scope of work. So those are the main things that you can do in the hiring process. Before I move on, is there any questions about that?
Can I just summarize? So your leverage points own committee members in the hiring process, which, as you recall, Tina described as somewhat less empowerable than the management process. But you still have leverage points. Those would be participating in the RFP, RFQ decision, participating in the write-up that goes out to consultants saying, hey, do you want to put your hat in the ring? The descriptions and the criteria by which they will be judged. Then in the evaluation stage, I'm not hearing you say every committee member gets to be involved in this, but there would be...
Well, like David was involved as a representative of the Water Commission on the Stratus hiring from the past. There could be, you know, people who could volunteer, there could be a subcommittee. You could engage in that process.
You could engage making the first cut, the interview questions, which are the city's way of milking even more work out of the applicants without having to pay for it. And then the rating and the selection. So that's the power. Oh, and Doug Ankfer will not let me forget the scoping. So right. The contract negotiations and the telling people exactly what the work is that's supposed to do. For instance, you wouldn't want somebody to scope only look at recycled water. You would be all over that. All right, now comes the management part. I'm going to let Nicholas put this piece paper on the wall. It's a great step forward in our relationship.
So in terms of the management, I think that it would be useful for you to hear sort of what's in my head about how this works in terms of this committee, because I have a pretty clear picture of at least an example of the way it could work. And I guess, you know, like we all do, I sort of have the stuff that's in my head, and I think, okay, well, that must be how it's going to be, right? So how I see it is that once the consultant, the individual, the team, whatever it is hired, that he or she, they are the partners of this committee. They come to the meetings, they sit at the table, they ask questions, they give answers, they participate in discussions that you might have. At the end of any meeting or at any point in the meeting where you're talking about some topic and you think, oh, it would be great if we could get more information about that, or someone to analyze this, or someone to go someplace and you know, just think about this problem and bring back some options for us to consider, those kinds of things. Those would be things that the committee would come to consensus about and make assignments or give tasks to the consultant. When the between one meeting and the next, the consultants would go away and do their work, and then they would come back and they would give presentations of that work that would really be the format for discussion. In other words, it's not a here's the answer and we're not going to talk about it. It's not. They're not dictating to you, you're not dictating to them. It's a collaborative conversation between the committee and the resources that you all have as your consultant to massage the information, ask questions. The diversity of the committee is a really big value in terms of making sure that the questions that the consultants would have or the nature of the discussion would be very rich, and I think that's exactly what you would want. From there, you might say, okay, from here we kind of know where we're going to go on that topic, or we have a sense over here. Let's put that on the shelf and let's explore these issues. Or you might say, there's more that we want you to do. So that's what goes on in my head about how I think a consultant, technical consultant, works with this committee. Obviously, the opportunities that you have for influencing that are what assignments you give them in terms of what tasks, what kinds of interactions you have with them in terms of the give and take and the conversations, the, you know, sort of brain-teasing kinds of what about this, what about that kind of conversation, the accessing their knowledge and experience and diversity of that, that to help you sort of see what you might be missing. So to me, that's the nature of the opportunities for managing that. And clearly, I think the only limits I think need to be put on that from the point of view of what you could do have to do with individual committee members can't give the consultant team tasks. And that once you've given it to them, the city has to manage their implementation of that task to make sure that it is on, you know, that if there's a task order, it has to be negotiated, that there's an agreed upon price, that there's a clear sense of what the time frame are. Those are really the things that I think we would need to do in order to make sure that the public funds are being spent appropriately, and that's how I see what the opportunity is.
So let's say we have a consultant, for the sake of argument, it's the group that the city already hired, to do different things. And we have a meeting and we ask them a bunch of questions, and at some point they go, well, you know, six of the seven questions you asked, we'll be back next meeting, no problem, thank you very much. The seventh question, boy, that's way beyond the scope of anything the city's agreed to pay us for. That takes a lot of work to answer that question. It's expensive. As a practical matter, who has to, does that go back to the city council to amend that? Does that something your department can amend? We obviously have no ability to change prices or costs.
Right.
Who does that?
So how we set the Stratus contract up as an example, this is how it has to be, was we allocated a chunk of money and we said we want this to be it's a not-to-exceed amount. I think it was, I don't know, $300,000 is the number that sticks in my head. Okay. We allocated that much money, and we said this is going to be a task order-based contract. In other words, we will, for each item that gets assigned, we would negotiate an agreement with them to answer that question cost X. And for the work of those four questions is, you know, going to be back at the next time, and this is what it's going to take. And then we would sign off on it and basically keep a running tab. And the strategy behind that was, we don't know exactly where this is going, and we're more interested in making sure that the right questions get asked at the time that they're developed than that, you know, some scope of work that is predetermined gets done. So it still could be that a really, really difficult question might get asked that would be very expensive and would require a lot of research and maybe time to process. And then I think that one option, if that happens, is to talk about, well, what can you tell us that can shed some light on it? Or are there other options that we could look at that might help us understand the decision space here? You know, sort of start with a process of don't just dive in necessarily. But again, that, I think the nature of the dialogue at the committee is extremely important to, you know, guide that. And I think that that's how I see that working.
Thank you. That does answer
that
question.
So is it correct to say then that there's no price negotiation? There's no, the selection of the consultants is not based on their cost? Because it doesn't say in the selection criteria, what I hear from you saying, it's actually done later. So.
Actually, what happens is that if you do an RFP, what happens is they give you a sealed envelope that has a price for their proposal in it. Not so much on the qualifications-based selection because they don't have any way to, you know, do a scope and give you a price. And I think if you can't see that document, but I think one of the things at the bottom, the one I'm pointing at is that one. Yeah, one of the things at the bottom, the little paragraph says,
once you've done the qualifications-based selection and you open the envelope and you start a negotiation process with the consultant to reach a contract that you can agree to and price. If you can't reach agreement because they want to charge you this and you only want to pay that, then you move on to the number two consultant.
That's the 2 second step.
Excellent question. Any other questions about it? So,
yeah.
Yes.
So if, for example, the committee said, you know, what we really need is a conservation specialist to help us with landscape conservation. And the consultant, say it's Stratus, says, well, we're not really expert in that. So then what happens?
Well, in the letter I sent you indicated that we had a number of other specialists on board right now. We have Madouse, which is conservation. If that's not good enough, we can find somebody to do the topic. We have somebody on fisheries. We have a hydrologist. We have a set of expertise that probably fit in here. There are some that we don't have. We don't have anybody who's an expert on climate change, for example. Off the top, although I think one of the Stratus sort of people in that firm has good chops on climate change. But if we don't have what we need, we can go out and get it. It doesn't necessarily mean it has to go through the whole, multi-step process. It depends on how big it's going to be. And I think that if you think that's going to be a need, then we need to try to get that sooner rather than later.
So if you have a contract, even though it's meant to be versatile and to have a deep bench, and if the committee really wants somebody that can't be gotten through that contract, you'll get them some other way if it's
right.
Practical, feasible, agreeable, blah, blah, blah.
Okay. So in your picture of how this would work, would the committee have input as to who these subcontractors would be?
Well, again, I think that we do have to go through a process of some sort. And if you had people that you wanted us to send the invitation to give us a bid, we don't have any problem with that.
But I mean, suppose we've already chosen the main consultant, but we do have these specialties that we want investigated. Would the committee have that in for it, or would we just submit the question and then the consultant decides who comes up with the answer?
In that case, it's not going to be the consultant who decides. It will be us. And again, if we had to, using your example, find someone who could give us advice on outdoor irrigation-focused conservation measures, which I know is something you're interested in, and we didn't feel like that was available through the people we had, we could collect names from anybody on the committee who had people to suggest, and then we would go through the process depending on which, dollar amount falls in to solicit feedback. And you know that there were some options on that chart, which I don't know what happened to it, that were, just ask for three bids. Call up people, three people, and get three bids. So it depends on how much money it is. We could do that. But I think you do have to remember, Tina has made this clear, that I can't sign off on anything. That whatever we want has to go to the city council. But that doesn't necessarily mean we don't have the flexibility to do that, to accomplish what we need to accomplish.
A clarification on that sign-off. I'm imagining that these funds that we're spending are within our budget, right?
And they're within the water department's budget, yes.
And there's been some money allocated to support the committee, and let's call it $300,000. And there's an umbrella contract with this general contractor. They've already stipulated that they can't do all the work. I guess I'm imagining that subbing underneath that, again, if it's within that general scope, could be easier than this somehow.
It sort of depends. And one of the things that you always have to ask yourself is, if the general contractor is the right person to supervise that part of the work, because typically if you're a general contractor, you're going to want to have not control, but oversight, right? And maybe in some cases that wouldn't be the right fit. Or you have this contractor who's really busy on something else and it's better for the city or someone else to supervise it. So there'd be some different options. It's not to say it couldn't happen one way.
Does the easy path that I've tried to sketch exist, or does it not?
Yes, it does exist.
Okay.
So once you have the general contractor, you not only have a great deal of leverage in terms of how that person's tasks are set up, and in what I'm going to summarize of what, oh, it's okay, I'm good.
Yeah.
I just forgot they're over there. Really, I feel like a lot of what Rosemary was saying about that dynamic discussion as opposed to a static relationship is that you're calibrating each other. So you have power over the general to a certain extent without the city giving up its fiduciary obligations, et cetera, et cetera. And you are not boxed in to using only people who can go through that contract. Nor are you precluded from having the bench changed within the contract. So it sounds like there are many angles of flexibility, which makes it sound to me like this is a lot about trust. So the potential for the power to be exercised appears to be there with some limits. The question is, how will you really know that until you get a chance to exercise it? I believe we... So the way this is supposed to work, in part we did the sequencing this way for practical reasons, but the hope is that you will be processing this information, and tomorrow when we have the consultant discussion, it will be a richer discussion because you know what your decision space is better than you did before. And if you have any thoughts about how to make that conversation go as effectively as possible, or missing information, or any way to help and serve you in that decision, let us know.
I have a quick question. Hopefully it's quick, at the risk of a rabbit hole and getting us off track. Because I know this is on tomorrow's agenda, but you're describing the process, the selection process. When we think about the independent review panel, we should think of a fully different process and not confuse the two.
Well, actually, if you read what was put out there to stimulate discussion, it was a process that looks quite like this in many ways, the sort of standard request for proposal kind of process. There are other options, but that certainly is a mechanism that exists, this process that we've just described.
And Greg, from my perspective as a facilitator, the storming, norming, and forming that you have to do as a committee in order to give Rosemary any useful direction on the consultants is the same storming, norming, and forming you're going to have to do in order to give her useful direction on the independent review panel. So right now the paths look really close. Good question. Anything else on this topic?
Yeah, you asked. Sorry. Okay. You asked, you know, what we might do to prepare for tomorrow, and I wonder if I could make the request of you, since it looked to me that we were starting to close in on some kind of agreement at the end of our meeting. We ran out of time. There was some confusion. If somehow we don't have to start all over again, if you could maybe kind of recreate some of the ideas that were out there so that we can take up where we left off.
Excellent. Any other requests?
Well, I would take Rick's idea another step. I think at the end, there were two or three people who expressed, you know, concern that they were being rushed, and you know, the group agreed that that was not an appropriate way to start off our enterprise here. But it might be very helpful for those people who were at that point feeling rushed to start by saying, well, what concerns do they not yet have answered? Because it seemed like about, you know, the exact numbers, but the large majority of people seemed like they were ready to go there, but three weren't. So I want to, you know, validate the rights of those three people to say, well, what didn't get answered yet, or what do we still have to talk about, or what's still hanging out that's bothering me, because that might be the quickest way. In fact, their concerns to be addressed, we might be done.
Let's do both, because of course. So let's do both, if that's okay with everybody else. Before somebody can answer, yeah, I still have some heartburn, they have to know what it is. And then let's focus the... We'll do a gap analysis, is how I would put it. Thank you very much. Any other thoughts?
Peter.
So just to confirm, tomorrow we're talking about the criteria for the selection, not the scope.
I think, well, there's an expectation that we'll have some idea of our path forward in terms of acquiring consultant help. And I had put that we would start by revisiting the criteria because I wanted to push the conversation from last time into a more interest-based thing. But, you know, we might not need to go there.
I was thinking about two stages. You have the recon phase and then you have the serious phase. Mm-hmm. Might be maybe wise to talk about the actual consultants we want to, the main consultant group we want to talk about, their scope and the criteria. Once we are in the recon phase, we have gotten a little bit going, we have technical support, and we have maybe a review panel already.
I think we're close to, that was close to what we were concluding, I think, last time.
Because this tomorrow we're going to talk about all three parallels, so that's the point here.
Yes, and with your permission, I would actually like to just lay out what the decisions are and when they're happening. First, talk more clearly about as close as you got to the first decision, which is what you want to do during recon. Let us start with a gap analysis, and then we're going to touch on what you're going to do in the real deal. So that would be the sequence of events. But now we're having the conversation instead of preparing for it. Come talk in my ear as you wish, because I don't mind advice, as many of you know by now. Nicholas, who's on first for this next committee member update? Is that you?
Yes, I am.
Great.
I think you get to arrest me. We're about 10 minutes behind, but we'll see if we can make it up. That was a really important discussion. There was no point in rushing through it when we haven't done it. But we'll try to make up a little bit of ground here. The next item is the committee member updates. And in the charter, in a part of the charter which actually you haven't yet approved, but it's in there, and it's going to be recommended by the subcommittee in a moment, it says something like... there are lots of other organizations in the Santa Cruz that have a significant interest in water policy. If a committee member has an opportunity to hang out with any of those organizations and has something to report about what goes on there, then we'll have an opportunity at the beginning of every meeting for them to do that. So this hasn't been approved by you. If you think it's a bad idea, obviously you shouldn't say anything. But if you think it's a good idea, this is the moment to tell your colleagues what you have discovered since the last meeting. Does anybody have anything they want to say? Mark.
The Chamber of Commerce has, through their Community Affairs Committee, has appointed a subcommittee of the Community Affairs Committee to support the effort in the WASAC moving forward. And we had our initial meeting, and there was some general enthusiasm around moving forward with this process. And there was a reiteration, probably of sort of the Chamber's water policy statement, which I furnished everyone early in this process, with a sort of a renewed emphasis on the importance of economics. And not just to the ratepayers, but to the community as a whole, and stretching that out to the region, because we can't think of ourselves as an island. We really are interconnected economically. That's probably the highlight. We had a good meeting, but that's probably the highlight.
Thank you, Mark. Others, David.
Yeah. At the Water Commission last month, we moved forward with the Master Conservation Plan. At our July meeting, we'll be getting back a draft of the technical memorandum that will support the plan when it goes to council. But in between now and then, everybody should have gotten emails about the workshops that are going on and the opportunities to participate and really learn about the Master Conservation Plan in the nuts and bolts sense. And I just want to encourage people to do that. It's a very, it's a large project. It's got a lot of different facets. It presents a real opportunity for understanding.
Thank you, Dave. Rosemary.
One other thing I guess I just want to mention related to the Water Commission. On Monday night, the Water Commission will be meeting with the City Council chambers at 7 o'clock. On their agenda, the first item is the
is a sort of fisheries 101. It's going to be a presentation by our fisheries consultant, and Chris Berry, one of our staff people, is going to talk a lot about, mostly about what fish need, what fish issues are, you know, what the flow, habitat, relationships and issues are, kind of the impacts assessment. So that's at 7 p.m. on Monday night.
Thank you, Rosemary. Others, Suzanne.
I spoke with a couple friends of County Land Trust, and about, I've always been curious about what's the deal with the water supply that Cemex owned or still owns up in Davenport. And I was told by them that when Cemex donated the land to the Land Trust, at some point after that, they offered to sell the water rights for $1.2 million. Now, it's not clear whether the water rights are what's the magic year, 1914 or something. And it's not clear whether when Cemex shut down and for a while was not using the water, whether they lost their water rights. So the water law is a little unclear. And the Land Trust didn't want to buy the water. They told Cemex to donate the water, they donated the land. And I said to my friends, well, gee, maybe some local investors could come up with $1.2 million, you know. And that's where the conversation finished.
Thank you, sir. Mike.
Could I just ask really quickly, do you have some rough estimate of, like, how much water we're talking about in the ballpark? You're really wild. I have no idea.
It's substantially more than all the other North Coast states.
Great. Thank you. Any others? Then let's move on.
Well, wait. Oh.
What?
Sid and Doug and I had a meeting.
Hold on.
In which Sid contributed his Gantt chart expert. Now, a Gantt chart is a way of managing projects, and in particular, of looking for critical path issues. And I sent out an SOS, and Doug and Sid helped with the Gantt chart that I put together for RECON, which essentially is just a different way of looking at that table that I sent you that is an overview of the RECON steps. I'm hoping we can use that. Now, the most interesting part of that discussion came when I asked them, what about contextual issues? Not what's happening in the committee, but what's happening outside the committee. Doug, thank you so much for your time and input. And Sid, thank you for yours and for Cameron's. It was really helpful.
Then charge second from the left there, right there.
The two ones. The one on the far right shows you the big picture, and the one on the left shows you RECON.
Thank you.
Thank you. So I think that's it. Is anybody else going to jump up?
Can we get those charts in an email format or something so we can
I don't know how they can be.
They can be sent as a PDF. If you need them tonight, we'll send them to you. But the fact is, they're still
tonight. No, I just something.
Right. I want to improve them, and then I'll send them to you. And when the website is going.
Thanks.
Yeah, it's much easier to see it online than. So we're almost back up to time. We're doing really well. The next item is to discuss the materials from the last meeting. What we're looking for is agreement on any changes to the meeting summary, any changes to the action agenda, and obviously approving them, and then an understanding or an agreement from you about what materials you want in the future. We want to know if what we're giving you is insufficient, redundant, useless, helpful. So, here we go. I will find the summary. The summary.
Unless there's no changes to it.
We should. I think first we should probably do the action agenda. So you had a chance. The action agenda was sent out to all of you. Here it is. We can go to any part that gave you heartburn. So let me know now if there's anything in the action agenda that you would like to visit. Looks like we're okay with the action agenda. Does anybody not. Does anyone have? Do we have consensus essentially about the action agenda? Does anybody want to hold back against the action agenda as it stands? So we got consensus on that. Thank you.
But now let's go. Could I ask a suggestion? Use that as a guide for future ones. I think this is good for me. And that, I think it informs people about what we did. It's the right level, not too much information. It's important.
Thank you. Does anybody have any other comments about the quality of the, like the utility of this as a format?
The granularity.
Any other to sort of support or to shoot down, Mike? Okay, it sounds like you probably pretty much agree with Mike.
Good job, Clark.
Yeah, good job, Clark. Clark did that.
Thank you.
Let's go then to the summary, which is the one that we did, which is a. That's good. Is that it? Yes, that's the summary. So you saw the summary, I expect. What do you have to say about the summary? Anybody comments about the summary? Anybody not want to agree with it as a reasonable record? So we got it there, consensus on that one too. Great, thank you.
Yeah.
Now, let's just spend a moment if we can. Mike said he really likes, and you pretty much concur with him, that you really like the action agenda. How useful was the summary? Did you actually look at it? Or,
and you won't hurt his feelings.
Yeah, you won't hurt my feelings, please. It's like, great, something else we don't have to do. is it something that you found helpful? Would you like it again? What do you think?
It helped me recall the context behind the decisions.
So it was helpful because it gave you a little bit more context. Mike?
I think it would be very useful for someone who missed a meeting.
Yes. In the public.
And for the public who wouldn't know what we did and weren't able to come and sit through the meeting.
Well, that's good to know.
Which is an important function.
Yeah, it complements the action agenda.
Thank you. Other comments about this? So it looks like we're going to keep them both. Do you want it changed in any way? Was there anything missing or something you'd like to add or something that you just thought, why are they talking about this? Okay. Then let us not agonize over that. We'll keep going.
Embrace success.
Embrace success. And I think we're doing really well for time now. So we want to talk about the calendar. There are two things to do here. One, we want to review the meeting schedule, and then we want to ask if it's really enough. So let's have a look.
Yeah.
Here's the meeting schedule is at Excel.
Oh, we can't do it on Google?
Yeah. We can do it on Google. You want to do
it on Google?
It's in a column, and everybody just, you don't have to go month to month.
Oh, okay.
You see, you already had it up there.
Yeah, I know, but I'm not smart enough to use this computer.
Try that. Thank you.
Excellent.
So, as you can see, when I'm not standing in front of it, they are generally speaking consecutive days, May 29th and 30th, June the 26th and 27th, but some are not consecutive days. For one reason or another, these are, generally speaking, Thursdays and Fridays, but for occasionally, in September, for example, it's the 24th, which is a Wednesday, and then the 26th, which is a Friday. So did anybody, you've seen this list, did you have any questions about this or dates that just look completely unreasonable?
I had two thoughts. I assumed those were typos, so bad on me. But I felt like 2 days was tight, or was going to be tight as we got into the meat of the matter. And at the risk of committing us all to a 50% in effective days, at the risk of increasing the impact by 50% on everybody, I'd like us to consider whether we want to go 3 days for each session or 2 days. If there's going to be a gap in the middle,
I want to go to that discussion. Thank you very much for raising it. I've actually got a little thing we can show. So before we go to that, if we were just doing 2 days, as we are so far, were there any problems with the dates that we set?
Okay.
Well, I mean, I have a problem with the date, but that's going to happen.
Yeah, yeah, that's going to happen. But I mean, it wasn't like, oh, I can't do that because, you know, it's every Friday or...
No, no, I am.
That, that's
good. The September dates, I'm out of the country and I'm going to miss it. And it doesn't matter if you move it 3 days, 1 day,
so. You're in a kayak. What do we want?
I think it's... The other thing I would know.
It's in Excel, so.
No,
no, no. So, here is. I should just get my cheat sheet. Because you're going to ask me about this. The answer off the top of my head. So, Carrie and I thought this would be a really cool thing to just recognize that in every meeting, there's a kind of a hardcore sort of housekeeping thing that we have to pay attention to. This is the the meeting this week. So this is 6 hours as a pie chart, and public comment, updates and communication, the meeting record. It's about 5 hours. It's about half of the 6 hour period, almost. This is the amount of time that we have for deliberation and making decisions. It's equivalent to one meeting. And that's just today. Our concern really gets going when we look ahead. And we imagine, well, what happens if we do some real outreach activity in your meetings? It's sort of on the cards. This gets much bigger. You know, the public comment goes up from, I don't know, it goes up to about an hour and a half, and probably nearer an hour. The updates and communication gets a little bit fatter. I forget the reason for that, but I think it's because we do more reporting. And then the meeting record and scheduling, that gets fatter because you're going to have to start doing reports to the council. You're going to have some consultants of some sort, or you know, you're going to be dealing with experts in some way. You're going to need to manage them. I mean, we gave you a very modest 25 minutes per session, per 6 hour meeting. That leaves you with about 2.25 hours. And at least 2.25 hours, probably half of it, you're going to be just sitting and listening. So you're down to about an hour and 5 minutes of opportunity to really engage with each other and deliberate. So this really concerned us. We are waving a red flag. And we have a little exercise. I got in touch with three of you. And the people who I thought were most constrained in terms of schedule, and I asked those three, so what does it look like to you? And there seem to be sort of, I suppose, four ways. One way is to say, we're fine with 2 days. 2 days is fine, and we don't want to do any more work in any case. So, you know, that's one thing. Another thing would be to say, yeah, we do need to get more meeting time, so that we're going to have to do this every month anyway, and if we add another day, you know, that would be another 3 hours, which would essentially more than double that. So we want to put on, or it would be to say, you know, let's just have longer meetings. We don't want to have more than two meetings, or two sessions in a meeting. So let's just have longer sessions. So it's like, this is going to become important. It's longer, more, or longer and more.
More days, you mean?
Yes. Longer sessions. Longer sessions, more sessions, or more sessions and longer sessions. But the three that I got in touch with came back to me saying they would really kind of like to have just longer sessions. Most of them said that. But it was actually very hard to get agreement over when the session should stretch. You know, so it sort of stretches deeper into the night, or it stretches earlier into the day, and it's like there wasn't really agreement there. So so here's the exercise. Do you understand the scope of...
Isn't there a third option?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't there a third option that we continue the way we are meeting and just extending the time?
Except here's the thing with that. If we just kept on doing this kind of meeting, we would still only have 2 hours per meeting. That's the real problem. So you would go on and on and on into far into the future, but you would only ever get 2 hours a month for the deliberation stuff. You know, the other stuff is important, and you get a lot out of it. But the nitty-gritty is it doesn't get any longer per month. And it seemed to us that that was a really significant issue. And I can't speak that I can't speak to the whether or not you can go longer. I mean, I looked at the video the way that a lot of you did for whenever it was, that last meeting, when your report was reviewed. So, I mean, I got that as well as you did. I don't know what it means any more than you do, but it obviously meant something. Is your hand up?
It is.
Go ahead.
There's probably a fourth option, which is we're fine the way we are.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yes, that was the one I said right at the beginning. I didn't even bother to put it to that. So here's
your way of saying we're not fine the way we are.
Well, no, it's my way of saying that if you don't think of that, then just stay in your seat.
Okay.
Here's the exercise. Pick up your Play-Doh, rip it open, make it into a shape that you will is distinctive, so you'll recognize it again. And then stand up, stretch, because you've been sitting for a long time, and put it where you want to put it back. Longer, more, longer and more. A little
bigger.
Yeah.
Would you
make this decision to go to the final?
Oh, that's right. Well, you know, so I don't know if you all heard David. David was saying, well, why don't we sort of just wait and see how it goes? And the one of the problems that we have with that...
I'm not saying wait and see how it goes. I'm saying manage it as we go based upon the tasks before it.
Thank you. The difficulty that we have with that is that it is monumentally hard. I mean, I was surprised by how hard it is to find a room big enough for you when you need it. So we've got to look ahead. Or we will be doing it in a parking lot somewhere. that's really the answer. It's a logistical thing. Yes, David?
Well, except that, for example, if we have an expert or a series of people that we want to do presentations for us, then we could either schedule those as a webinar or even record them as a webinar that people could get access to through our website and then be able to come to the next time when we're actually going to interact with the same education information base.
So there are all sorts of strategies that we could use, I agree, to make sure that, for example, we made the assumption here that you would be listening for this hour. You wouldn't have to. You could spend that, you could just go on the web and download the slides and listen to the audio of your expert talking to you about fish. And then you come here prepared. So there are ways that we could stretch or make more use or better use of your time in the room. I mean, would you like us to try that?
I would.
Mike.
What? I think it might be useful to get a couple more comments before we go through.
Yeah.
So I have a comment.
Thank you.
Logistically, it is so much easier to keep a place for a couple of extra hours than to get another place for a different day. And I'm assuming people have jobs. Most people have got things they have to do during the day. So we're talking about extending into the evening rather than getting here when people have to. It's not a problem for me. I can leave in the afternoon, but I think maybe others cannot. So my assumption would be that there's a real virtue in thinking about if, again, maybe not every meeting has to run longer, but this is along David's lines. But if we start to perceive that we're going to need to have more time, we could make flexible logistical arrangements with the church or whatever. Mm-hmm. Could we stay for an extra hour and a half on these 5 nights or whatever? Because for me, once I'm here at 8:30 at night or whatever, I could be here until 10. I'm not going to schedule a new meeting at 8:30 at night. But if you ask me to pick a different day, now I'm in trouble because I'm doing other stuff. I'm going to have to cancel something else. It's going to mess up my life. So my view is as hard as long meetings are, they're better than picking extra days. They're really, then you have to go take this room from somebody else that scheduled it. Nobody's going to schedule this room at 8:30 at night.
Mm-hmm. Probably not. You're right. So other comments?
No, this is a question. Is there, in your experience, is there a cost difference to us between a 2-day rental and a 3-day rental on these rooms?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I think.
Okay.
Yes, Sarah and then Mark.
It's always easier to shorten meetings and cancel them than it is to schedule more of them later on. So it's kind of better to have them on the books, no matter what the final decision is, just going forward. Because you're talking about 14 people trying to get back to you, and the scheduling becomes much more complicated the closer you are. So that's my comment.
Thank you. Mark and then Rick.
I'd like to... I'll second Mike's comment, and I'd like to just add to that, that when I look at your pie charts, I see some overhead time on that pie chart.
Yeah.
The overhead time is not likely to change meeting to meeting. So if we have a third meeting, we're still going to have some overhead time in the third meeting.
It's sessions,
whatever you want to call it. But adding time to the length, the overhead... Each meeting has some over, we've done some overhead tonight. We had public comment, we had this, we had that. If we have a third session, we would have a public comment, we'd have, sort of this check-in, and this overhead would go away. And by lengthening the meeting, we would actually end up with more, sort of the time that we're looking for, which is this discussion deliberation time. But that's my imagination.
I'd like to just respond to that. I mean, you're right that that some of the overhead does happen regardless. It's like it will follow you wherever you go. But some of it is unique to the month. So you only make one report to the council. You only have to. Dealing with the calendar, working through the agenda, any breaks and things like. Well, actually, the breaks follow you. The updates from other committees and the direction of the consultants, those are all once a month. So you would get, although you wouldn't get 100% of your additional session, you get a big chunk of it, much more than you get now. But you're right that some will carry on. Rick, thank you.
This is a little bit about structuring the meeting. I mean, I think there's a lot of members of the public who would be really interested to come to our meetings when we're having these presentations, whether it's, about water transfers or water pricing or whatever. And so I can imagine us scheduling those in the evening. And, that's what I was.
So you want the public to be able to come?
Well, I think if we think about those presentations as being our great public outreach opportunity, and then schedule them accordingly.
So that we'd rather have them on a Thursday evening rather than on a Friday afternoon.
Right. And you don't want webinars because it's...
Well, for people who can't make the meeting, it might make sense to video. Yeah.
Thank you.
I would second, lengthening the meetings, and as much as my mornings start very early, I would think staying later on the Thursday evenings would be better, but I would suggest on the Friday afternoon meetings, if they're going to get longer, to start them earlier.
Start the Friday earlier.
Yeah. Rather than run later in the evening.
Yeah. We're getting sort of down to specifics here. Well, maybe we can do the specifics in a sort of the trade-offs between earlier and later after we see what we're talking about.
Yeah,
so
your first vote and everything.
Yeah, that's right. So here you go. With your distinctively shaped blob. Stand, walk, and position it.
Figure it out.
Yeah. delicious retreat. Now, this, I don't care so much about bathroom breaks because I figure you'll figure it out. But I do think people need to stand up every hour, so we're always going to make an effort to find some way to incorporate the work of the committee with standing up and going and getting more food, too. So it looks like longer.
Yeah.
I also wanted to say something about the marvelous and brilliant facilitators that you have. I don't think that the learning part in the learn-do model that you picked when you picked option B has to be passively listening. I hope it's much more interactive, and I hope we can interact with the public. So, that, just a little peanut gallery action there.
So, we've got a really a loud shout for longer. Let's talk about longer. But go ahead, Mike.
Just one quick comment about the last one that you just made. There's a real difference between the kind of report that this committee needs and what the public needs. I'll go back to Rick's comment earlier. If you're going to present something that, you know, I would assume that everybody on this committee is going to take the time to read stuff if it's given to us beforehand, and you show up already knowing the basics of the presentation. I don't think we have to be, you know, entertained with a dog and pony show. I think we should be in the questions pretty, I mean, they could say something quick, summary. But I'm going to assume, like, I'm thinking about how I teach a class. I got classes where I've got to give a lecture before we can have a discussion. And I have classes where I expect the students to show up knowing what we're talking about, and we begin the discussion after another lecture. And I would hope that when we have presentations, let's say on water transfer or something, that there's something that somebody has written that we can, whoever our presenter would be, would give us material that we can come here prepared to then ask hard questions about what it is they've already told us. Whereas with the public, you cannot assume they're going to have read stuff. You have to give them a full, which drives them crazy, ironically, because they sit there and they have to listen to an hour and they've already talked to you. So there you go. You know? But I'm just hoping that we don't mix those two together.
Excellent.
Thank you. Thank you, Mike. So, what I want to do next is to see if we can reach agreement about what longer really means. You know, how many hours are we adding, and when are we adding them? Would anybody like to tell me what they think about that? Eric?
Second, Sid said about the longer, later Thursday and earlier Friday.
How much longer and later? Earlier and later. I mean, can we add 2 hours each time, make it a 5-hour meeting? Or are we talking about an hour and a half or an hour? Extra. So 3 hours goes to 4 hours or 5 hours or something else. Sid.
If we were going to add a day, we'd add another 3-hour meeting. So if we added an hour and a half to each meeting, it seems to me we'd accomplish what we're looking for.
Yeah. So instead of ending at 8:30, we end at 10 o'clock in the evening. And instead of starting at, 2 o'clock, we'd start at 12:30. How does that, is anybody kind of hating this? Charlie?
I would certainly vote for the 10 o'clock on Thursday night. The earlier Friday is difficult. I'd negotiate down to 1 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. Charlie's already taking a hit. He's the one person in the setup who didn't get his needs met. So now we're adding to it.
I second Charlie's.
Take his offer. Grab it while you can get it.
Yeah.
Peter.
I would advocate for an hour, half an hour less on Friday, on Thursday, that's 9:10. I mean,
So you would say just add an hour?
Yeah.
So go from 8:30 to 9:30. It would move from ending at 8:30 to ending at 9:30.
Can you start at 5?
We could start at
5. Yeah,
so if we, so on the Thursday, on the evening ones, sometimes it's a Wednesday, of course, but normally it's a Thursday. We would start, instead of starting at 5:30, we start at 5. And instead of ending at 8:30, we'd end at 9:30.
No, I want to know the important thing is which will Rosemary buy us more food?
Buy us what? More food.
If you're in the
Okay.
How about coffee?
Yeah, on Thursday.
Pardon me? You like
Always
this?
Be a good, on Friday, we could have coffee.
And we definitely need more water.
Well, yeah.
This is the evening one, and then the afternoon one, the Fridays, what's that looking like? We're hearing from Charlie that really going earlier doesn't work for him.
Well, yeah, I heard him say that he might do one, but time would not work.
Yeah, so you could go from one. So that would be
1 to 6.
Yeah. Well, we're at the end of 5 in any case, don't we? So at the moment, we go from 2 to 5. Well, 5. Some are saying 5:30 and some are saying 5. Is this just kind of because we want to go home on a Friday evening, or is it?
That's really.
What's wrong with you? if I put that, we've added an hour and a half here, right? An hour and a half, and we added an hour there, so we got 2.5 hours out of it. Peter,
okay.
And then Mike.
On Friday, I think I get home the same time. If I get out here at 5, I get out at 6.
Because traffic's so bad.
Well, that's quite true. Depending on where you meet,
that's quite true.
And I'm not crawling either.
So,
I think we should go with this and understand that we'll stick with this for technically 4 months, because at that point we'll either be kind of getting stuff done and feel like we're going to succeed at our project in the time we've been given, or we'll all be panicking and realize we need something else to respond to it. But let's wait to see if it's not working. Let's try this first.
So let's review in September.
Until the council starts slapping us around or something.
My question was, would there be objection on Friday to go from 2 to 6? What on Friday?
2 to 6 would be great. I'd go for that.
So,
why not?
This one, so we put this back to 2, which is what it is at the moment.
That's better.
And then...
Yeah. I'll do that.
It works.
Because you all realize that you can't get home anyway, you're stuck.
And we'll send a note to your family members and children to explain what
we're doing. Yeah, you should all have that. We'll sign it. We'll co-sign it, just so you can give it to them. They'll stick it on the refrigerator and weep.
If she buys more food, they can just come.
Okay. Done.
One question as it relates to securing the room. We had the, Rick alluded to it previously, we had the misfortune of losing the room last time, even though we still had some energy in the room to finish a discussion. Is there a way to have a little envelope around our time period here? So if we're going at it and we're willing to go another half hour, we don't get pushed out of the
street. We normally do that, and something went wrong.
Is that right?
Yeah. Normally we do have a... It turns out that actually Friday is a difficult time because it's not that there's another group coming in afterwards, it's that the staff wants to go home. Exactly. So I think we've got what we need here. We stretched it, we put in a little bit of extra time, we'll revisit this, and we'll do what we can to keep extra time on the ends, so that if you're really engaged and you want to keep going, we can do that. Thank you.
Can you explain back to my misunderstanding about the typos about these meetings that have the bill level?
It's because of Water Commission.
Planning
Commission meetings. And that's March.
That's March on Thursday.
And actually, there are others as well. It's like, for some reason, the last Thursday in August was just packed. There wasn't a room in Santa Cruz. So that was why we moved. Isn't that strange?
City government's closed.
I know, it's weird. So anyway, Rick.
So I'm wondering if we might schedule some of our meetings in Live Oak, which is the community outside the city limits, but still in the water service area. And the reason for that is that those people there, might want to have some input, or at least the recognition that we're recognizing that that's a big part of our service.
Thank you. Does anybody have any comments about that idea? David?
My only concern is that the more we change our location, I think the harder it will be for the public to follow where they want to come.
I agree.
People need to know when and where, with a certain amount of consistency. We're not getting as much public turnout, I think, as any of us would like to see for the meetings. I appreciate the people who are here, but we're going to have that outreach function. We've got to make it easy for people.
I want to say, just actually, to follow up on the two of you, that I received a phone call complaining that we're not central enough. Because people want it to be really easy to get to.
I guess the question was, is there a location set for...
Although I couldn't rattle it off, but essentially we're going to try to migrate to the police department because it's more central, easier to get to, and a really well set up facility. No party lights, but everything else is pretty good there.
An ocean view.
From the police department? There's an ocean view from here, yeah.
I know.
This will make Rick happy, but I suggest it's an important point symbolically, and I think in that sense it's real. We should plan one meeting in Live Oak, and according to David's comments, do most of them in the city, the place where people know where we are, just do one and make the point that we're not ignoring that part of our constituency.
That's interesting. I don't think we have a sort of meeting which would be obviously a kind of a Live Oak meeting. But in terms of content, it would essentially just be kind of pretty much arbitrarily going to Live Oak for a particular couple of meetings, a couple of sessions.
Have you planned any workshop kind of outreach sessions or thinking about it?
We'll talk about that
after
the Charter Subcommittee. We're going to do an overview of the recon, and that'll give you a feel for the kinds of components that we anticipate in each of the meetings.
But the important answer to that question is it's what you want it to be.
That's right.
But this is where the location would be more important.
Absolutely.
We are back over time again. But I'm done.
To help exacerbate that problem.
I knew I could count on you.
Always doing my best. Would it be in order at this point to talk about logistics or other considerations about remote participation for members who can't be physically here at a meeting but who want to attend?
Can we do that offline?
I'm happy with that. I just don't know if it's going to be a general concern.
Well, I can tell you, right, we tried it for Dana. And also for Greg, who were both away for the first meeting for one or more days. And when I described to them what they would have to do in order to be able to participate by phone, which involves having a sort of wheelchair access in the room where you are, having the door open, having the agenda posted outside 10 days beforehand, and a bunch of other stuff, they said, no, thank you, I'll miss the meeting. And you'll remember that we did, for Dana, who was driving to the meeting and got it half an hour late, we essentially tried to give him an opportunity to listen in, but he wasn't allowed to speak. He could only listen. So it's a Brown Act thing, and we're sort of jammed by it.
I'm still going to take it offline then, apparently.
Okay, well, you want to talk about it more? That's wonderful. Then let's move on.
So before we move on,
I just brought a picture of ice water out there for everybody.
Thank you very much. You know, there's one thing that you agreed to last time, Greg.
I'm sorry, before you move off this calendar, you don't want to hear from us if we have conflicts with the schedule, because everyone will have some. Right?
I think, yes, as we were saying when Mike brought it up, there are going to be, but if you have like a chronic, Fridays are always impossible, that's what we want to hear about. Thank you. At your last meeting, you decided that you wanted to give the public an opportunity to make comments before any agenda item in which you were going to make a significant decision. We've made some decisions already, but they didn't seem to be very substantial. But I'm sort of catching myself here to make sure that you remember that if you look at the agenda, now we're moving on to the charter. We're going to look at the recommendations of the charter subcommittee and agree on, hopefully, just about the whole of the rest of the charter. Then I want you to think, is this significant enough so you want to give an opportunity for public comment, or is this something that you think it's fine to just kind of get on with, bearing in mind that, you know, we're 10 minutes behind, you have 35 minutes for this item, and if you give away time to public comment, it takes away time from you. Yes, David.
And two members of the public in the room.
Well, this is pretty academic, actually, but I want to kind of...
So let them speak.
David is saying we should have public comment.
I would say the comment should take, on this issue, we should take the form of waiting until we discuss what we're going to do. We may solve everybody's problems. And if when we're back, before we say, looking at the whole picture of what we've done, do they have a problem? Let them comment at that point. Please don't do Section X because it's a terrible thing to do. Let us reconsider it or something.
So,
rather than having them rely on stuff before we even start discussing
it. So... Mike is saying, well, you heard what Mike said. Does anybody feel the same way as Mike does?
Yes.
Does anybody feel that what Mike's saying is completely crazy? Yeah. Oh, not completely crazy, but you know, just, you don't want to do it that way. Okay, so that's what we're going to do. So we'll have an opportunity for public comment after you've concluded, and then you can revisit it if you need to. Great. So what we'll do is, you've all got the document. I hope you've had a chance to look at it. What I want to do is find out if you can just give me the section numbers of the bits that you really want to dwell on. That then we'll find out where we go first. We'll just do it where the heartburn is, but we'll do it in sequence. So give me if you've got a heartburn about something, give me the section number.
Article
done. Article 1. Others.
It looks like this in the card stuff.
Right?
Unless it's packed in front of us.
Oh, then we can open it.
I can't see it at all, so it doesn't matter. So I'm saying.
Well,
I mean, it's just fuzzy. So
it's too fuzzy, and I'm wondering if it's worth pulling the screen.
Do we need it? Anybody need it on the screen?
We
don't need it on the screen. Yeah, we don't need it on the screen.
It's actually going to be especially useful for us to have it on the screen because we can make the changes as we go along. Are we the only place with heartburn is Article 1? Then let's go to Article 1. Oh, I'm sorry. David, you were sort of looking at me pensively.
You're probably talking about by Reed. Is that Article... Sorry. The glossary consensus? Reed made it.
Oh, yes. If it's yellow, if it's highlighted, then you agreed to that last time.
Okay.
If it's not highlighted, then the subcommittee, the charter subcommittee, has paid attention to it and is making a recommendation.
I also have a question about Article 9. Just to clarify.
9. So we're going to 1 and 9. So let's go to 1 first of all. And the way we'll do it is, Doug, you'll explain what it is that concerns you, and then we'll start with Erica. Erica will be the first. I should say the subcommittee, in case you've already forgotten, was Erica, Mike, and David Baskin. So we'll just kind of rotate around them responding, and then everybody will pitch in. Go ahead, Doug.
Okay.
So cementing my position as the resident pedant, on purpose, I would rather us use the word risks than threats. Just in the literature, threat is definitely defined, generally defined as having capability and intent, and risk is probability and harm. And I think we're talking about probabilities and harms here. We aren't talking about folks out there with intent. So I think threat is just the wrong word. And I know it eventually originated with the city council, but...
Does anybody else have a problem with that? Let's change it. Move on. Next.
Okay, so did you
go ahead? I'm in favor of efficiency in this. That's how we got through this.
So it's instead of future threats, it's...
Yeah, risks.
Future risks.
And then the question I have about reliable is, it's my understanding that would include economically sustainable or affordable. Is that everybody else's understanding of reliable? Is that part of being of a reliable water supply?
No.
No. So if we can't afford it and it therefore it doesn't work, then that's still deemed reliable? Or do we need a separate, do we need an economically viable qualification here as well?
Do you want to use affordable?
Affordable, economically viable, in addition to reliable, probably.
Mm-hmm. Where in the series?
So it would be adequate, affordable, reliable.
Safe, adequate, reliable, affordable, and environmentally sustainable. I don't care about the order.
But you'd like to put affordable on that. Does anybody have any comments about that idea? Does anybody object to it? We'll get to you in a minute.
It turns out it doesn't have to be adequate. I mean, reliable if it's huge. If it's on the average, it can be adequate.
we'll go with that more afterwards when we do the public comment. So it looks like there's no objection to putting in the word affordable. Mark?
Well, are we done with the risk threat thing?
Are we? Oh, let's go back to that.
I was thinking more about that. I think risk is not a thing. It's not something we should ignore.
I'm not saying we should ignore it. I'm saying we should use the word risk instead of the word threat.
Okay.
So instead of saying future threat, it says future risk.
If you go to the literature, you get it diverges on those two terms.
David.
Yeah. I'm comfortable with the changes we've made so far, and I would like to go back to one that we just talked about in the committee, which is the word strategy. In the subcommittee, we didn't like the word strategy because we just wanted to develop recommendations for city council. That it could be broader than strategy, if you will, or different than strategy, or strategy plus other things. It was suggested to us by the facilitator that this was the language that the city council had passed, right? Change it, then I would like to still change or take out the new strategy.
So you would remove strategy and say develop recommendations?
Yes. Because I think that we want to be able to make recommendations in the broadest sense, whatever we come up with.
Any concerns about that? No concerns about that? You just touched on a really important point, which is that this was kind of given to you, I mean, by the council. So these are essentially you're recommending that the council change this. Okay. I realized that I said I was going to let the subcommittee respond, and I just jumped right in. So I apologize.
They did.
So how are we doing on section one?
That's everything I have.
All right. Then the next is section nine. Is that right? Is there anything else? Does anybody go, oh, wait a minute, there's something else. Let's go to nine then, see how we do.
I just wanted to make sure I understood the intent of nine, where it says missing three meetings, three and you're out, that we're talking, it's semantic, we're talking meetings, not sessions.
That's correct.
Okay.
And
thank you.
Would it make sense to put that in glossary?
Possibly.
There's going to be some confusion about the terminology.
Okay, so we'll put it in the glossary. What a meeting is and what a session is.
Actually, the reason that we put the language in that way was that the meetings will occur monthly, usually in two or three sessions, and it's only missing meetings that
right.
So we defined it in the body of it.
Yeah, I just want to make sure everybody was crystal clear with that.
Yeah.
Okay. Then I won't put it in glossary because you got it covered. Of course you do.
So, is there any other issue in the charter that you want to bring up?
Well,
We'll go to Sarah.
There's a do or a may in the end of that. Do you want to choose one of those?
In 9?
Yeah, yeah. This is odd. It says there's all sorts of formatting. Yeah. That looks like an old one.
Maybe this is an old one.
This says April.
This is April. This is an old one.
We deleted
I apologize.
May.
So we deleted them? Okay.
We're working off the wrong document.
Yeah, we opened the wrong one.
That doesn't hurt
I
us.
I opened
so,
the wrong one.
That doesn't hurt us so far because the same article is the same. So we're good.
And I assume we'll take copy edit suggestions offline.
I think it may not matter.
So there's the charter that you check out.
Oh, let me just double
click.
Really?
What's that?
Good.
Wait.
It's about a download.
You know, I think until it's up there.
I'm sorry, I think that I would just go back to where we were. Because
yeah, really,
Sarah
that's a escape out of that.
I have one other question.
Let me ask you all what we're futzing with this.
The other question is, we have a placeholder there, Article 11, Managing Expert Input.
Yeah.
Now, I was not clear that we actually needed to have managing expert input in our charter. And if we would like to have a charter that we can send to the council for approval and not potentially wait, I'm just wondering if we'll make a decision about managing our expert input, but do we really need that in our charter, or would it be a, you know?
Can we put that into the conversation tomorrow? And because
yeah.
That would be so cool.
Yeah.
If you had the charter done.
Well, I think we actually probably have a better idea of how we might select experts than we do of how we would manage them, which would be evolutionary.
Yeah. So while that comes up, I wanted to ask you something from... Oh, we're ready to go.
We're ready to go. So here we are. Here is 9. As it really comes to you from this subcommittee, and I apologize for loading the wrong document, but you've got the right document in your hands, I'm happy to say. There was some confusion about, first of all, there was the question about was it a meeting or a session? We resolved that one. Then there was, Sarah, did you raise something else?
Yeah, it was because of the wrong document.
You're reading it off the screen. So
I have it in my document.
Oh, then what
but
is
it? But it's eliminated, that's fine.
Yeah. So, little I...
You have it in your document?
I do.
So what is it that you have in... Did you
oh, it said, instead of saying they forfeit their membership, it said they do or may forfeit their membership.
Oh, I see.
It just looks like I have a few
with so many
other edits that are
we must have
bracketed
sent around the wrong
in line that might not be in the final document section.
Okay.
Thank you. Then, do we have agreement? There are two things that we need to attend to here. Well, let's have public comment first, and then we'll get the agreement, and
well,
then I want to...
Otherwise, there's no other issues left in this chart.
That's one of the questions that we have to ask. Great.
So I just noticed something I hadn't before. I wasn't sworn in on April 30th. I was sworn in before. Does that matter? Are we getting to meet?
Oh, I don't know if it matters.
Are there two?
David will tell us if it matters. Then
apologize if that's too picky, but it matters down the road.
Do you remember the date that you were sworn in?
I think it was the 24th, but I'm not finding it.
Can
we
say on or before?
Yeah, we do that.
On or before. Sue, what? Good save. any other things that are cropping up? Then let's go to public comment, and then we'll see if we still want to agree on it, and then we'll also see if we want to give a further charge to the subcommittee. So, public comment. Gentlemen. Anything you'd like to say about this?
They're probably good for water issues.
And you too.
I would like a better access to board packets before meetings, like be able to see on the
list. About the
things like these, the charts back there, are quite valuable, wonderful. Gantt chart, you know.
If it's any comfort, the committee didn't get it either.
They were bad like this morning or yesterday sometimes.
And also, I noticed that what the committee says is recorded on these various postings, but often somebody from the community says something that might be worthy of posting, and I like it if the community things got posted as well.
So the community public comments do get recorded in the summary.
But it's my bad. I did a terrible job last time of recording the public comments. I just blew it. I think we're doing a little better this time. I think that Nicholas's question was whether you had any questions about the charter.
Yeah.
And I'm not hearing that you do. However, earlier, as we recorded on the flip chart, the Article 12B, if that's an abstention, then it violates Section 7607 of your how to run a meeting city code. So the question for a legalistically minded person is the stand aside provision in 12B an abstention?
Is there anybody who can mark?
I recall raising this issue at the first meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And Tina Stoll, as I recall, Tina responded and said, no, it is not.
And Tina?
Because the rules under which this advisory committee is operating are different somehow than the Planning Commission, where you capital, which is why I raised the issue.
And I would ask council member, we are not subject to that the way the Planning Commission is. And if you want a definitive answer, the quickest way to get it is to ask John Barrison.
Yeah.
Get an answer. Otherwise, my assumption would be there's not a problem here, but if somebody wants to be really sure about that, you should ask Barrison, because it's not just a general legal question, it's a very clear question about the city charter.
So, David.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be an issue, but I would agree that the whole charter should be run by Barrison before it goes to council for approval, because that way you head off problems of the past, so to speak. Standing aside doesn't indicate that you're actually abstaining. It indicates that you are against it, but you'll live with it, which is a different kind of thing. If Barrisoni says it's a problem, then we're going to have to change it. If he blesses it, then we aren't.
Yeah. Good. We'll run it by Barrisoni. In fact, it's not just ask him, it's like run everything by him.
Everybody okay with that?
Yeah. You were actually giving us public comment about the charter, or at least you felt that you were.
Yeah, it was a little off.
You were a little off.
I was thinking that I could participate better if I had more.
We're not forgetting that.
The question of making all documentation publicly available as easily as possible is a big one, and I think it's going to come up mostly when we talk about the website. The website subcommittee is going to report out.
My biggest concern is how, as a potential presenter, how do I fold in the things that are coming up? I need to be able to kind of see what's coming up.
Yes.
Okay.
So, Rick, while you were, or Nicholas, while you were working with the version control, the discussion came, is the subcommittee charter, you know what I mean, done? And I had said, if you think you can eliminate the remaining article about expert management, could that decision be made tomorrow as part of the expert management conversation?
I see.
And if the answer is yes.
Have you closed public comment?
Well, somebody else has put his hand up. They were very quiet before.
My name is Bill Malone, and I just noticed that really loud. I just noticed that I think this is the first time we've asked for public comment.
No, we did it at the beginning as well.
You had it at the beginning. You've gone through three or four or five items and discuss the calendar.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. I would think you're going to have give us an opportunity after each item.
I'll explain what the idea is. The charter says that if the committee is facing a significant decision, then they can, or sufficiently significant decision, then they can decide to open the item to public comment, and that's what we decided to do for the charter. But we didn't do it for any of the earlier issues, which was sort of approving the agenda and approving the summary and all that stuff. So
it's only going to be on items you decide.
The committee decides.
But there's also public, general public comments in
India. I just mean, and at the end, it's called oral something or other.
Oral communication.
Thank you, oral communication at the end. Other questions? Then let's close public comment. And now we go back to the are we going to agree to approve the charter as it's presented by the subcommittee?
Is it subject to any different input from John Garrisoni and what we decide tomorrow about section 12? Was it?
The expectation is, I think it's 11.
With those two exceptions, we approved our charter.
Okay, so this is subject to Barisoni and...
Don't ask Barisoni to review it. Ask him if he has any problems with it. He'll rewrite it for us otherwise.
Okay.
So here we go. Does anybody have any problems with it as it stands, as we amended it in the last few minutes? So it's... are you all... done?
So... I have to admit, I'm a little fuzzy on the kabuki routine at this point. Is it in or is it out? And if we're thinking about taking it out as drafted, what's the implication of not having this covered in the charter?
That's a discussion we're going to have tomorrow at the end of the selection process. Is that okay?
I still want to understand, I guess before I want to decide whether that's okay, I want to understand what the implication is of not having this in the charter.
So you'd like to dispense with it right now?
I'm just asking.
A bureaucratic distinction of no significance for our actual work would be my answer. Mm-hmm. It'll appear somewhere. It's a decision we're going to have to make. It just won't appear in this particular document. I think that's our decision.
It'd be in our minutes instead.
Our minutes, a photo, it'll be reflected in the decision we make.
Yeah, I mean, my concern is that we don't know enough about how we're going to want to manage our experts to make that decision tomorrow. Okay? I think we'll manage them as we go. Things will come up. And I don't want to find us in the position that we put something in our charter about how we're going to manage our experts, later decide we want to do it differently, and then have to go get city council approval.
Agreed. Like I said, delete it and move on. Right.
So Doug is saying just dump it. So get rid of the letter.
That's why I suggested that, you know, I thought we could take it out because it's not essential to the charter, and I think we'll more effectively manage ourselves without it in there.
So let's see.
I agree.
Does anybody want to have 11 in some form in the charter? Well, that was easy. So we got rid of 11. We're still we love the whole thing. We've taken out 11. We love it as it stands, as long as John Barisoni doesn't fall out of his chair when he meets
him. That's it.
Well, good job. When you ask Barisoni, you've got to focus him on the specific provision that we have concern about.
And which is that one?
The one about the stand-aside.
Oh, the stand-aside, yeah.
Does it constitute an abstention in violation of the city charter?
I would ask questions slightly differently. I would ask him whether consensus is voting. Because it's about you can't abstain from a vote, but if consensus isn't voting, then it doesn't matter.
Well, he'll probably get in touch with the charter subcommittee to discuss it.
Sorry.
You lucky guys.
We didn't mention all the options for consensus. You can sleep through the consensus.
Correct. So, Sarah. So, do we need to frame that in our fourth option then, that you cannot abstain, or is it just an assumption that that's okay?
I think that since that's the provisions of the city charter, we have to comply with that. When we do have actual votes, people can understand. But they can accept for conflict of interest.
So
that's has to be
quick. So, are we good? Are we all good? We're all good. Well done. Then we're only 4 minutes behind. Carrie, you're up.
Oh my gosh, where's that water?
Yeah.
What we really need now is the recon narrative on the screen.
Yeah.
And as
well, let me wrestle with it. I'll see if I can bring it up.
I mean, it's possible.
Oh, you know, I've got it.
So, if this process had 3 years, we would have developed an idea of how recon would go. You would have developed it with our support. And what I'm realizing is because this process is going faster, which I'm not saying is a bad thing, Nicholas and I need to think three times as much between the meetings as we might normally do, which is also not a bad thing. The risk is that in doing that and in trying to get material ready for you so that you can really efficiently work through these things, we would overstep our bounds. We don't want to do that. So we're here to serve you. We're trying to serve you more than we normally would if with a longer running committee. Slap us back any time that that isn't useful and it seems like we're getting out of our role. Please. So, a couple of you asked, well, what really is happening in recon? And that's the reconnaissance, and it's the thing that you as a committee chose when you chose option B, that you were going to run through the decision process very rapidly and then do it again. One of the things, though, about recon is when I say rapidly, that's not the only difference. Because the objective in recon is to explore and understand your decision space and to prioritize your research. The objective isn't to come up with the right answers. Far from it. That's the objective of the next stage, what we call the real deal. And that makes the differences in a lot of ways that you'll come to appreciate as... can we zoom it so people can...
We have it.
You want to be able to read it?
Yeah. Yeah, and actually all that matters is the left, so if the right falls off, I will tell you that. So... I would normally think of recon as happening in 4 months. Yes, you have copies of this. And all of you should have copies of this. But based on what I heard in the interviews and based on the information we have gotten from you, I made the assumption that you would want to do outreach as part of your recon. So it's taking, put the extra time in there. So one of the reasons you chose option B is that you consider this to be a complex problem. And one of the characteristics of a complex problem is that it's actually hard to identify the goal until you try to get towards the end, and then you have to go back and redefine what the goal is. So rather than trying to figure out what is the gap between expected supply and expected demand, what you're going to be doing is agreeing around about what the range of possibilities is. And that probably means using scenarios. Because even if you all came from the same perspective, the amount of uncertainty is huge. And you don't come from the same perspective and you don't have the same values. So what you're trying to do in late June on the recon do aspect is to at least define the space that the supply demand takes up from a scientific perspective, what really is the supply and what really might the demand be, and also from a policy perspective, how much risk are you willing to tolerate? So, the learn part is to come together in a shared learning kind of way on the issues of risk
They use some scenarios. They should have, oh, I do have uncertainty in there. And the policy on drought tolerance and how those interact. And so you're going to end up choosing scenarios, each of which has a range of supply and demand possibilities. A portion of the learn part can be, you know, I like to, especially with your time schedule, I like to try to accomplish more than one thing at once. You have the choice, and it's by no means necessity, to use something called multi-criteria decision support as your way of running the models at the end of recon. And the advantage of that tool is it gives you a way of prioritizing what additional research you want. That's very credible that you can take back to the council and pretty much they'll have to say, you're right. All right? And that's a nice thing. So what I want to do is show you that software, and in the process of running some examples of that software, we'll be talking about the different types of uncertainty, stationarity and non-stationarity, stochastic, irreducible, or, oops, I'm embarrassed because I suddenly realize there's somebody in the room who knows more about statistics than I do, and I might not be able to snow her. And in fact, Sue and I are going to talk tomorrow morning about how to set up the discussion in as good a way as possible. Could there be another presenter as well on how to deal with uncertainty, risk management, and scenarios on that day? Absolutely. But at the very least, I want to present the multi-criteria tool so that you have a vision of where it's going, or you can tell us that you don't want to go there. I will resend you the link that shows you how to download a free mini version of that software, and if you want to play with it beforehand, you can. How much time do I have for this segment?
Until 25 past.
Oh.
So you've got 25 minutes.
If none of you have any questions, we'll be fine. All right. So the next one is the time to do the alts and criteria, and that's where the issue of the input and the creativity from your community about alternatives possibilities comes in. And this was actually the idea of doing an alts fair. So it would be a portion of your meeting would be like a science fair where people could come and present their alternatives and you would be like the teachers who are reviewing those. You could also then, in July and August, you could use this decision model in a really basic way to do a first cut of that wealth of possibilities. And that would give you practice about where you're going and tell you whether, how much you like it and how you want to use it. And it would also give you a very systematic way of deciding a big fat range of alternatives, but a little bit, you know.
Sorry, can we ask a question that you don't have time for? I'm assuming that there'll be at least some quantitative work done in this part. In other words, it's not helpful to know that there's a transfer model that does in fact work and transfers it all from one agency to another, but it's at least the first order of magnitude estimate of like how much it might produce or something. It seems critical to know whether it's worth going further with it, right?
Totally quantitative. In two levels. We want to quantify the range of possibilities. So if you said it was 2 at units and you said it was 10, we could say, for the purposes of doing our sensitivity analysis eventually, we could say it's between 2 and 10 units. But the other quantitative part is we're going to talk about, so that's an uncertainty because it's a range, but we're going to talk about the type of uncertainty associated with even estimating that much. And both of those things will go in the model. The model can handle qualitative things because sometimes those are going to be important, but it's very quantitative oriented. But where the looseness comes is that you're allowed to use a range instead of agreeing on a point. So the reason that you can do the alts and the criteria in 2 months, even with some outreaches, you're not going to fuss a lot about how well defined they are, whether it's 2 or 10, that kind of thing. You're just going to keep moving on. In recon, the purpose of an alternative is not to come up with the right answer. The purpose of an alternative is to send a probe into the decision space. You want to understand the contours of your decision space
And sometimes an alternative might be, can I say crap? For actually solving the problem, and it might be very useful for exploring the decision space. So that's one place your head, you spent your whole life wanting to have the right answer, but now that doesn't matter so much, okay? But it also lets you move faster. Then in August and September, what you're doing is starting to rate the alternatives. So how well, so you have your criteria, it has to be economically viable, it has to be good for the environment, and there will be subsets to that. It has to meet the needs of one of your scenarios.
Go back to the mission statement, it's got to be reliable, whatever it all was.
Yeah, exactly. So then the question is, does alternative A do well in meeting those criteria? And in order to do that, we do want to be as quantified as possible within ranges. But I think that the place you really have power over your consultants is in a dialogue about what scales to use. Don't tell the consultant, go rate alternative A for finance. Tell them, this is how I would want to measure finance. I'll give you an example from something I know better than water, which would be recreation. So if one of your criteria for reservoir management was that you wanted to increase the diversity of users, and you had a consultant who was an expert on that, you could say, go measure the diversity of users, or you could ask, what scale are you going to use? How are you going to rate? Are you going to rate diversity of different types of sports or ages? How are you going to collect the data? So I want you to have that conversation now. And what Rosemary would say is have that conversation with your consultants there so you can start to calibrate them now. So you finally figure out what your scales are. In September, you get to these very coarse ratings with the uncertainty. It might be really nice to have your independent review panel come and have a conversation with you at that point. And I'm hoping you're thinking about the review panel as a conversational piece as opposed to the high and mighty send me a report type thing. In October, you run the model over and over again. And you're not trying to have them, you're trying to gut check these different models. I don't care what the output is that gets spit out by the model, but I care about one of you saying, wait a minute, how come that alternative did so well? Oh, it did so well because of this assumption about economics. Are we sure we want that economics? So that's what I mean by play. It's like you have this rig and you're going to push on all the joints and see what you learn from it. But it also has a very formal way of saying, if you knew more about the economic impacts in the secondary way that Bill Tyson was mentioned, you would make your decision process this much more powerful. But if you knew more about whether groundwater recharge is actually effective, you would make your decision this much more powerful. So that's where we're headed. And then it seemed, again, I'm just trying to channel you, that this would be an ideal place to go to the public and have something much more interactive, where you said, this is our preliminary stuff, we're about to start the real deal, where are you? Oh, that was a yawn. I thought it was.
Sorry.
So that's just looking at the first two columns. I put in columns for, if assuming that you would have an outreach subcommittee and what they might want to do. I put in a column for trying to develop an independent review panel, et cetera. Is this a good silence, or is this a...
This looks very promising to me.
It looks very what?
Promising to me.
Oh, good. If it's a compliment, I want you to use the microphone.
It seems very promising to me.
Excellent.
just go quickly around the room, because I think this is a little bit like drinking from a fire hose, and that's not fair. So I'm going to use this as a way to have you giggle stuff. Sue, any thoughts?
I'm not sure how uncertainty is envisioned relative to risk.
Oh, I think those are just comments. That's like a list of things we had to discuss.
Okay.
And we'll talk about that more tomorrow. Excellent. Great.
I think I understand it. I have one thought that, and I just think I understand it. One question / observation I have is that the real deal is the real deal, and the real deal has just two words, and that's December, April, the real deal. So is that, you just let go of that for now, and it's not really practice, but is it practice, kind of, or up to then?
You mean, is it normally better planned?
No, the real deal is sort of a second iteration after we're good at it, is that right?
Oh, right, so recon is practice for the real deal, yeah.
Okay.
It's also like a telescope adjusting a little thing to let you see that you've got the constellation, now you want to find something. Go to the real, you know, study what you really want to study. But yeah, first of all, you're looking at the right place in the sky. That's what I was assuming.
And we should just have comfort level that we have zero definition for that now. Right?
No, you should not. Because concurrently with this, we should also be looking ahead to the real deal. Who are you going to need? Is this enough time? How are you going to prioritize, etc.? So you should be concurrently planning for the real deal as your telescope is helping you hone in on where you're going.
And up until December to April, real deal. Well, I guess late November I see reference to the real deal, but at what point do we get...
Well, actually, I'll be honest, I hid one of the columns because it was so pathetic. You know how you can hide stuff in Excel? Where I was trying to look forward to the real deal, and honestly, I just felt that I was so out of bounds on my relationship with you all to be even thinking about that. I mean... You might want to have a subcommittee very soon that is starting to look forward to what the steps are in the real deal. But if you're asking in the professionals who use this as a system, because this isn't the first time this has been used, do they show a layout? Yes. And I could even recommend an excellent, short, and very readable book about that. So we wouldn't just... I didn't mean to make this look like you would just fall off the edge of a cliff.
That's helpful.
You should tell us that. Look, I'm interested in everything you can send us, and we will read it or not. But
I absolutely would love for you to read it, and if I could blurt it out accurately in this moment, I would.
No,
but I would certainly send it to you.
This looks all wonderful. There's one item I personally think would be useful, might be for everybody else, so that's a basic toolkit you could get maybe from the water department that tells us very concrete how many households, what are they using, what's the history use, how much is the toilet, how many toilets in the district, how many, whatever, shower heads, and what sort of kind of what the use is comprised of, lawns, and...
basic stats about the
system. Right, exactly. Our storage facility, what we have, what historic was, and how many bathtubs you consider as Loch Lomond, those kind of things. You know, you simply, facts you have already in your toolkit.
So just as a point of reference, and David probably knows more about this than I do because, the two Davids actually, because the Water Commission looked at the baseline conservation, the water use report, which has a lot of detail in it, I'm imagining, about how water is currently being used in the system and by, you know, for what. So that's probably on the website someplace, and if it's not, I can send the link to it.
Well, we'll make
What's
sure.
What's it called again?
The baseline water use report, and it's from probably 2013.
Yeah, it's called baseline survey.
Baseline survey.
And I would expect that people will learn about the baseline survey if they go to the first one of the sessions of the Master Conservation Plan, because that's part of the nuts and bolts. It's really the underpinnings of the Master Conservation Plan. It's a full data set on the use of water in the city. It tells the permeation of low-flow shower heads.
Where did
we find that? I know it's on the city's website.
So we'll get you a link to it and make it available. But I think it goes a long way, and then there's lots more additional data on, you know, numbers of customers and what have you. The breakdown of customers we can provide.
Does it have supply side data too?
So good, because what you want is you want the committee to start being steeped in some of the basic information.
Well, as you go through the steps, it would be good to be able to plug in some numbers, just, you know,
yes.
Math.
Thanks.
I was wondering how much of that review of that material is happening in these meetings as opposed to our own education outside of here. Is it incumbent upon us to go out and read the water management plan and the conservation
plan? Oh, no, no.
All that stuff?
I'll tell you why I wouldn't like to do that. I mean, it's a model that you can use. But you're a committee. You're trying to do shared learning. And if you're each going out for, it seems like a horrible burden. But it also doesn't accomplish the...
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that with you? Are you with that?
I think so. I mean, although I somehow don't want to discourage... It's like, I think that... You need to find ways that suit you for kind of absorbing this stuff. And you may find that you want to wait until everybody gets in the bus and goes and sees the dam or whatever it is. Or you may want to sort of go online and read the baseline survey. Or you may find that there's you and a couple of people that you trust, you want to just kind of crack some, you know, have a book group. This is not Maya Angelou, it's...
Right, there's no restrictions on you learning yourself, but I think it's responsibility to create the structure and make sure it's all feeding back into the group.
That's right. I mean, that is right. So it's not to discourage you from going out and doing your own stuff, but we need to, at the same time, accommodate joint learning. I mean, that's going to be really important. Thank you.
Charlie.
It's a little loosey-goosey for me, but I understand it, and, you know, we'll take the path. I'd equate it to a backpacking trip where you establish your base camp, and you go out and do some little exploratory day trips, decide what you really want to explore, collect some information, get the lay of the land, and then look into it in greater depth. So it's an approach.
I mean, it sounds to me like during the recon phase, we're actually going to go around the world two or three times. And that, you know, first we're going to go around once just trying to figure out what the world is. Then we're going to go around again and look at the world with some more detail and try to understand more about it and its underpinnings. And then start going around the third time where we actually try to generate criteria and evaluate the world a little bit. And having the experts on board early will enable us to make sure doing that, as Peter would describe, in a factual and fact-based manner, based on the real data that we have been collecting and the department's been collecting for years.
Right, which brings up something that the member of the public said, who's not here now, unfortunately, but the hope that what you do have, you use in a discriminating way. I'm going to focus the question a little bit on the alt fair idea, since you're kind of the outreachy kind of guy.
Yeah, I mean, this kind of comes up often where it's a balance between inviting everyone to come and throw out their idea and, you know, Sarah and I acting as curators, in a sense, on the website and what should go up and what's important to not waste everyone's time, but also to make sure that everyone feels included. So I guess it kind of depends on what is entered into the contest.
Right. How the alt fair is designed.
Sure. Yeah.
I feel like I'm about to learn a new card game, and I'm really excited.
Well, it seems cramped to me to for us, even the recon phase, to hear from the kinds of resource people that I'd like to hear from. I listed about 12 different topics that if the recon is like looking broadly and then we narrow things down, I don't see how we have enough time to look broadly to even get the most cursory presentation from some of the people about some of the some of the alternatives that are out there. So I mean, I'm talking about just July and August that I'm noticing for presenters. So wondering how to stretch that out, maybe start out next month, mm-hmm. you know, with somebody like John Ricker, who mm-hmm. an amazing encyclopedia can kind of give us a whole... You know, I think some of the people are asking for that.
Right. Well, when we set the June and July agendas, let's talk about that. Okay. Rosemary?
I actually am really excited about the idea of an alts fair. I think there are a lot of ideas out there that would be really fun to have, ask people, you got an idea, you bring it, and, you know, we've been talking internally about the possibility of helping people to get the alts that might be presented more kind of comparable from a cost perspective and sort of sitting down to, you know, say, okay, I see what your idea is. If you're going to do that, you need a pump station and, you know, this many, just to get the capital cost down. And the operating costs are really hard. But we do have a lot of people in the community who have interesting ideas. And I think that given the committee's time, it's going to be really, really hard to hear from every single person who has an idea in a way that provides an opportunity for people, you know, to feel like they've been heard. And I think that this sort of levels the playing field. Everyone can bring their science fair project, if you will. And I think that there's things that we could do from a technical and support perspective that could really help to make that a really rich and pretty exciting and kind of fun event.
Oh, I love science fairs. But I'm partial to them. But I like what Rosemary's getting to, and I think that part of this kind of preemptive before the science fair, instead of just opening it up, which will kind of guide David's concern as well, is actually providing guidelines for the information we need to hear from them mm-hmm. as well. So, I mean, it's a great idea as long as you want.
It's a spend and
yeah.
time one.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is interesting, because really that's what you want from all your presenters, is to tell,
right.
give them the... Yeah.
And it, you know, it's even for everyone. They all get the same information on the kind of stuff that we're looking for. And it's nice to have that one-on-one conversation rather than a presentation and us all doing our questions with it. So I like that open concept.
Ah, exactly. So it's not this...
Yeah, I mean, this is just a little bit more formal and...
Okay.
And then we can come back and share what we've also learned, maybe as a kind of in our reprocessing, we might all bring something different to the table depending on our conversations.
Excited, Renee?
No, I had three comments. The overall process feels real familiar to me, so I'm baseline comfort with that, as I've always done products gravity type work. With respect to the alts fair thing, I would like for us to have, we talked a little bit about, there were some hints about structure around it. I think it's important that anybody who's going to present us an alternative be able to present it in the context of the criteria we've established for evaluating alternatives. So they've got to have done some work in that regard, rather than just, hey, this is a great idea, but this is a great idea, and this is how it would be reduced to practice as regards these criteria that are important to the committee. So we need to communicate that out effectively so folks can prepare for that and make the work meaningful. And finally, I guess I don't see the recon as... I see it more as a depth constraint than a breadth constraint. So that the extent to which we're going to be working with outside folks during the recon period, we want to try to get as much breadth as we can, but it doesn't prevent us from coming back later to dig more deeply into any of those areas. So if that maybe helps us think about the ordering of how we bring in outside experts so we get that breadth maybe at the cost of some depth early and we leave some karma in the bank to get deeper later, maybe that helps manage some of the tension you're feeling.
I just think I just want to go back to that one public comment about how we do just use all the information that already is out there. So I don't know how we do that at the Alts Fair or anything, but just to make sure that we, you know, work at it.
So, right.
You know.
So the Alts Fair is not only this
is exciting, sort of boutique-y things, but remembering too the ones that were have been studied more prominently.
Yeah, so
it sounds like so let me do the subcommittee of the Alts Fair.
It really does, doesn't it? Are you volunteering?
We have the water conservation master plan.
Can I be on the list?
This is part of this.
I'm beginning to grasp this. I think it's a good layout. I do think we're pressed for time on some of this. I agree with what Rick says that maybe we do need to get somebody to make a discussion for tomorrow, like you said, but we do need to get somebody here sooner rather than later to maybe give us a general overview of everything that's going on, which would pick up some of the things that Peter talked about. And I know there's information out there, but I don't know who that person would be. I'm not as involved as someone like Rick or Rosemary, but maybe it's somebody from the city that could give us that. The Alts Fair, I think, is a great idea. I think we're supposed to be reaching out to the public, and I think that's a great way to do it. I'm not sure that we'd accomplish all that in one of our meetings, and we might want to set a separate day aside at some point to set that up and do it. I could see that being a long afternoon or day. And that's about it.
Oh my gosh, I gave Mike the last word.
I just make one point. I hope I'm not belaboring something obvious, but I would have, following another suggestion here, that the people that participate in this fair are given a sheet in which has them certain, the second questions made that they, along with however they want to present, or the dog and pony show, or wherever they got, but they also need, you could pick up a copy of a piece of paper, which there are many copies as people will visit, you can take home with you that says, they name their proposal and they tell you it's going to, they think it'll cost this much, and they think it'll have whatever kind of consequence it does, and it'll save this much water or produce it or whatever it is. But we should decide what those criteria are in some way so that you don't just kind of leave the impression there's lots of things out there, but you actually have something to go home with a stack of stuff about these options that you can sort of study further. And then, of course, we would want to come back and really interrogate those things with our experts and find out whether what they're presentation is accurate and so forth, but at least for the first pass, you get some more information about it.
So you want clear parameters for the presenters. You want to be able to compare apples to apples.
Yeah.
And you want it to be efficient and useful.
But also exciting.
And exciting. Yeah, excellent. So it sounds like I'm hearing from the committee, first of all, if you decide you want to have an Alts Fair, do you want to ask the public before you make that decision? Our four people.
Sure.
All right. Oh, public, what would you think about having an Alts Fair that in which people could come and present their alternatives, similar to a science fair, and the committee members would have exposure to those? What would you think? Briefly.
I've got three or four concerns. One is... So Cal Creek Water District kind of did this. Mm-hmm. They devoted board meetings one thing, not two. Different subjects, and heard from a lot of people. And they got a lot of uninformed opinion and didn't really get down to brass tacks. They didn't get actionable input that could kick off deep technical consultant experts examining the new questions that haven't been examined heretofore. My second concern is your timeline. It's only a year. And after putting a half a year of hard work into this, I have come up with things that I know are going to take some significant consultant time in a lot of different specialties, fisheries, many different kinds of things. Even though I've run the numbers to a large extent on what I've got. So I think that the heavy-duty input ought to come early in your cycle so that your consultants have time to process it in your timeline. A fair is a nice thing you can have later because a lot of times you'll have shallow and redundant input that you've heard before anyway. I really think you got to have a John Rickers and I might honestly say I really think you ought to hear what I have to say early on some of what I have to say is an overview, introduction, how big is the space, kind of stuff. Did you,
okay.
Did you, I guess that's enough for now.
All right. Any other comment? Sir?
I would suggest you, I like the idea of getting alternatives, of course, and I think you need to develop your criteria for evaluating them first, because, and then say, okay, presenters of great alternatives, here's a criteria we're going to be weighing you against.
Yes.
So that's, because, and that's what you're going to want to do in the long run, is
okay.
Do that. So just develop the criteria first.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Okay, so yes, sorry, Peter.
There have been studies being done over the last 30 years, and I'm wondering how much, at what point will we get access to them, or will they brought? Are you planning to continue the process? Some of the stuff is outdated, probably, but others might be totally valid.
Sarah had her hand up first.
I have a couple comments on that. A lot of it's in one of these CDs we received, which is the amendments to the draft EIR. And then tomorrow we're going to ask for input on what else you'd like to have on the website, too. So that's going to be kind of a clearinghouse for information. So it will kind of be more accessible in one location. So if you have questions, and we can then try and find the documentation for that.
Yeah, well, so specifically,
the timeline, too. Don't forget the timeline.
Yeah, which will be interactive. We're going to show that tomorrow.
Will we build Bill Thiebeling's study? Not his, but under his time, there was a big study done from company,
yes.
Waller Creek, said on that too.
Yeah.
So we go that far back.
I think I'm hearing from you and others, though, a concern that we're not just looking at the people who may come to the Alts Fair, but looking at the established pieces. And I'm hearing that is, in fact,
we are thinking about that and having that information. So, but if you have specific questions, I mean, we're on top of this one.
But the Alts Fair isn't instead of that.
Yeah.
It's as well as that. Okay. Any other questions? Where I'm going is simply to ask, I don't feel like is there a vote about the overview? Or is the, yeah, it's just, I mean, we're going, we're working. David wanted to talk.
I just want to make sure that even as we're charting out the refund, that we're going to bring a consultant team on actually give them a chance to give us some creative input about how we might do the refund.
Exactly. Absolutely. And I am, yes. So, but if you want to have the Alts Fair in July, you probably need to, and you seem to like it, so can we have a sense of the meaning about having an Alts Fair with its very carefully designed parameters and clear criteria? That's a yes.
No, it's too soon and it's in the summer.
Say what? July's too soon and it's in the summer?
Yeah.
You can't get it. All right.
Yeah, I definitely agree with some of your comments on that.
Speak up.
Oh, I agree with Jerry's comments too about getting what we want. What's the criteria?
You would be deciding your criteria in you'd have to decide the criteria in June. Yeah. Sue.
I wonder, don't we already have the criteria in Article 1?
I don't think, I'm not thinking that the criteria, especially recon criteria, which you know you can refine further, is one of the biggest obstacles this committee has. Let me rephrase that. I don't see it as a big hairy spider. There are some other ones, but not the criteria. So if you had criteria, David, would you feel, if I could, you know, just magically presented them to you and said, here they are, how would the schedule look to you then? I'm just trying to
Or is it still too soon?
I think we're still sort of getting up to speed on where we are, where does the rubber really hit the road? What are the few sort of main ways that we're going to meet the challenge?
Mm-hmm.
And just inviting the public to come in, or whoever to come in, just present us with some, maybe some good information, some bad.
Right.
We might just dilute, us that process. So
right.
Maybe after we're a little bit more geared up, we can sort of really kind of better analyze what they may bring.
So it's not the alts fair, it's the timing.
Yeah.
So, that's interesting. I'm just trying to see whether you could manage to do the alts fair later and keep recon as... The problem is if you extend recon overall, then your real deal is actually shorter than your recon. But so let's... We have a sense of the meaning that the alts fair... Oh, yeah.
I wonder if we can think of the alts fair as speed dating.
Yeah.
Yes. And just without any commitment whatsoever, without any... force on you, on any one of us, to say, oh, you got to pick your favorite now, this is it. What you really want to do is be raising questions, whose background do I check out, that kind of thing.
Oh, that's helpful, because I see, I wasn't noticing it and you were. Dave, were you thinking as the alts fair is a place that you had to fairly soon be able to say, yeah, I like this one and I don't like this one?
No, it was more just kind of an inclusive sort of public display of support.
So it was speed dating-ish in your head already. Okay. All right.
I share some of the concerns that some of the committee have voiced, and I can sum it up this way. I don't want to establish criteria for an alts fair set of presenters without understanding what it is we're trying to accomplish. So in some sense, I need to understand the problem somewhat before I can even establish the criteria that someone might have to meet. So is money important? Well, yeah, I can say money's important, but what does that mean? And what money? And is it capital cost or maintenance cost? I mean, there's too many variables at this point to comfortably establish criteria for anybody to come. To reduce it to an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper, give them 3 minutes. I mean, how do we, it just seems way too early.
All right, so Mark, forget the alts fair. You're deciding your recon criteria according to this thing in June or July.
I can't read it either.
Prep for alts fair is late July.
The alts fair itself is in August, but regardless of the alts fair, deciding for your recon level criteria is happening very quickly.
No, that's fine. I'm good. Let's do that first.
Then
structure an alts fair accordingly.
Okay, so if I said, if you felt comfortable you would get your criteria in July, I'm not trying to push the idea. I might be a little bit tired and not very graceful about this, but if you knew you had your criteria in July, would you then say a month is okay to have the alts fair? Or do you mean, I don't even want to think about the alts fair until I have my criteria?
Yeah, I'm okay with thinking about the alts fair without criteria. But I don't want to have the alts fair without criteria. Try some understanding.
Oh, of course, it has to be sequenced afterwards. Right. Absolutely.
And I just think that you're talking about an alts fair in July. That's, we have one meeting between there, and it's not actually July. So,
okay.
I think that's just premature.
Okay, it does feel rushed, and it wasn't even on our agenda that we had to decide this. It sort of felt like it was in the air, and I didn't want to lose it if it was. So let's let this go for now.
Yeah.
I'm
good with that.
And that brings us to, first of all, thank you. Secondly, if you want to see some more detailed thinking about the sequences, the Gantt chart, which is the before last poster over there, shows recon in detail. And the one to the right shows your whole year, and you'll see on the second half of it. It's just empty. So here we are. done a tremendous amount of work, which means tomorrow is going to go really well. We are at the wrap-up and the evaluation. You have evaluations in your binder, and oh dear, members of the public, you also should have a copy of the evaluation somewhere. They're on the back table. So once there's a website, we'll do this electronically, but for now we're with paper, and we would love to hear what you thought of the meeting.
You want this now or
yes. Tomorrow? Yes. We'll have one tomorrow, too.
Are we turning to the days tomorrow?
Well, if you want us to.
There are recency issues with that. Psychometrically, that's all wrong. And, you know.
You know, and also, it's optional. Go home.
Okay.
Do it now, and then you feel justified in doing it quickly.
All right.
Shall we?
Oh, thank you.